Blog Talk Radio.
Yakuza! Yakuza! Yakuza Kick Radio!
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 This is the Bulldozer, Matt Tremont. And if there's one place to listen to on the internet, every Thursday, 9 p.m., Yakuza Kick Radio. Tremont says so. Who wants some?
God help us, Jesus! God and babies, Jesus! Help us!
Ladies and gentlemen of fucking America, this is Danny Havoc, and you have been listening to, or possibly are intending to listen to, the Yakuza Kick fucking radio. Fucking, yeah! Yakuza Kick radio.
Hell fucking yeah!
My name is Justice Payne, and you are listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
You're coming to come on Thursday night in
This is a brotherhood, and we all stick together. Like my nuts.
I ain't scared of you, motherfucker.
Yakuza Kick Radio, the best in internet wrestling radio, period, bar none, just like Adam Cole.
Everybody's a cunt but me in the world. I don't know what it is.
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town. That's Yakuza Kick Radio, and we're taking over.
Yakuza Kick Radio has risen from the ashes of bad internet radio and become the premier place for any independent professional wrestler to stop and record their voice.
Well, this is Mr. Insanity, Toby Klein, and if you're not listening to Yakuza Kick Radio, then you're weird.
Oh, I don't like the cut of your jib, fella.
This is Greg Excellent, Bearded Dragon of the Northeast. You're listening to Yakuza Kick Radio. If you're not, probably watching porn and you have this muted. You should be listening to it, Jason Mann.
Where are Biggie and Tupac?
Yakuza Kick Radio.
Give a nigga rope on this cowboy, guys.
All you have to do is listen to Yakuza Kick Radio, but you didn't. Now look at that guy, you homie. Fuck that. Black D. House.
Bullshit, man. Motherfucker.
Fuck you. Fuck you and fuck you. Who's next?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the introduction.
Hosted by J-Cat Morris.
You are now listening to
Yakuza Kick Radio.
It is Wednesday, October 30th, 2013. Welcome to Yakuza Kick Radio. I'm your host, J-Cat Morris. Should be having my guest call in shortly. If anyone didn't read the internet, you know, that I've been posting the updates, I'm supposed to have Chris Dickinson call in tonight. You know, pretty excited. I have a lot of things to ask him. Should be a very, very interesting interview, you know, providing he calls in. And, you know. So that, we got that to look forward to. Definitely some NFL talk as usual. If I do work things out the way I want them to work, I should be able to get Christian Simpson, who joined me for an NFL show a couple weeks back, should be able to get him on the line as well. The Sports Den is taking a night off as far as that goes. Nick's out in Colorado. He's on his way back and all that. So, you know, they're not unable to do a show. Plus, Dube is a Red Sox fan out there. So, you know, he's watching the World Series and everything like that. So they're taking the day off. They should be back, I think, Friday or Saturday they're going to do a show. And then, you know, be back to their normal Wednesdays. So there's that. Definitely going to, you know, review the upcoming CZW card that they're having go on Saturday. Hit that up as well. Well, the NBA started last night. You know, I watch it somewhat sporadically. Really, to me, the NFL season comes first. So once the NFL season wraps up, then I'll start paying a little more attention to basketball. But and I know some people like Jarrell, you know, EC Negro out there, you know, takes offense to those type of statements. But it is what it is. In my opinion, football is far more important. So. Yeah, I'm a Niner fan first, and of course, you know, my Miami Heat comes second. And then, you know, it is what it is. And of course, the New York Knicks fans and the Bulls fans and all of them get disgruntled, like, you're not a real fan. You should be you should care now. And it's like, yeah, I got it. There's plenty of basketball to be played after the football season's over. So, you know, but anyway, you know, no football games last night. So, you know, yeah, sure. I watched the Heat play, and, yeah, man, they dominated the Bulls straight up. I think they had seven guys in double figures. So, you know, can't argue with that type of thing. That's definitely the way you play the game if you want to win. You know, you don't need one guy with 60 points. Yeah, seven guys in double figures, that'll put just about any team away. Let me try to throw Dickinson a message here and see what's going on. But, yeah, they're playing right now. They're up 197 over the Sixers. You know, close game. Hold on. And, you know, close game. They did not start Wade. They didn't start Wade today. You know, out of precaution. I guess he was a little banged up after yesterday. You know, so, you know, pretty good to be that close, you know, without a guy like Wade out there. But either way. Game two, there's so much basketball to be played. That's what I'm saying. You know, one of these things, you go back and forth with these Knicks fans, and, like, you know, so talking shit with this guy. And he says something like, oh, well, we beat the Heat three times in 2013. I'm like, you know, I don't know how those three wins made you feel while you were watching us in the finals, but, you know, or how many rings that earns you. But, I mean, people like to cling to single wins and things of that nature, and it really, really doesn't matter in the, you know, in the grand scheme of things. When it's over, it's over. I do think I have my guest on the line right now. Let me see. I'd like to welcome to the show Chris Dickinson.
Hey, what's going on? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Cool, man. How you doing?
Cool. Yeah, Chris, I wanted to have you on. I've seen you wrestle for a long time now. And, you know, you've been definitely tearing it up on the indie scene lately. So I, you know, wanted to get you on. And, you know, people might not know a lot about you. So, you know, put you out there a little bit more. When did you get started wrestling?
I actually started wrestling. I started training to be a wrestler when I was 14, which was in 2001. So I started at the Jersey All-Pro Wrestling School, and then I played touch-and-go with it throughout high school for a few years. I did it until I was about maybe 17, and then I stopped until I was about maybe 19, 20, and that's when I started, you know, getting back into it, and I started working on the indie scene. But I did shows and stuff when I was a younger teenager, which is obviously not that much. I didn't travel too much, but I did a lot of my formal training when I was younger.
Oh, okay. Who was doing the training at the Jersey All-Pro School when you were training?
The head trainer of the school, his name was Magic. He was kind of like a real local New Jersey, New York type guy. And, you know, he has trained many guys that, you know, he kind of like doesn't get credit for training a lot of guys. But he's pretty responsible for training a lot of guys that were basically top guys in the indies in like that early 2000s crop, you know?
Yeah, who else was in your school? Anybody else know them?
I mean, Jay Lethal, I believe he actually trained Dan Moss before Dan Moss was with Homicide. I believe he actually helped Homicide when Homicide first started wrestling, learned how to wrestle. I mean, all those guys from Jersey All-Pro, from, like, you know, Insane Dragon, Dixie. He trained so many guys that went to the JMPW school that ended up doing stuff. I mean, he was involved in everybody.
What made you want to get involved in wrestling?
You know, what made me want to be a wrestler?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the thing is, like, I guess I have the pretty prototypical story. Like, I always wanted to be a wrestler. It was the only thing I ever wanted to do. It was like my childhood dream. Mm-hmm. And then when I got into ECW and I started like really getting into like guys like Rob Van Dam and Sabu is when I was like, this is something I really want to do. Like ECW made me say to myself, like, I will do this at all costs. Like, this is something I without a doubt want to do with my life.
All right. When you got, you know, in there and started training, was it what you expected, or, you know, harder, or you know.
No, it was like everything I expected. And the thing is, like, you know, not a lot of guys will talk about this, but I have been backyarding for a little while before I had really started. So I kind of like picked it up really, really, really fast. Because I would literally study the tapes and study the shows and really, like, how do they lock up? How do they take these balls? And I would practice it. And whatever I would pick up, I would try to do. So I was talking about this yesterday, actually, because, you know, a lot of, like, videos are surfacing of the old Jersey All-Pro Wrestling shows from, like, 2001. Like, I remember the first time going to training and, like, taking all my bumps pretty good the first time, running the ropes for the first time, and like picking up everything so fast. Like it all came pretty natural to me when I was younger. So I expected it to be really, really hard. And the Jersey All-Pro school at first, it definitely was hard.
Was there a lot of the they have the stories of the, you know, somewhat of a hazing or like the chop classes where they really try to like weed out the weak. You know, the weak links and stuff.
Oh, yeah, of course, absolutely. That was definitely there. But that has to be there. I mean, stuff like that is what kind of, like, separates the men from the boys. Sometimes it can get a little ridiculous, but I think in a way it's like, yeah, that stuff's mandatory because you have to, like, test the younger guys to see who wants to be there and who doesn't. I mean, I remember at the JP school, one of the things was, like, bumping. The emphasis of the bumping, like, their guy Magic used to make us bump, like 200-300 times a night. Like, it would be like so many back bumps, so many flip bumps, so many front bumps. I mean, over and over and over and over again until you got it perfect, you know. So I remember that. Mm-hmm. I remember that there were, of course, the chop fest and getting roughed up. The Homicide would come in and train with like a couple of his students, because at the time the Doghouse was kind of like in limbo and it didn't exist anymore. So he would go to the Jersey All-Pro school. And he would get in after, like, the JAP training, and you were welcome to train with him, and most people did it. I always did. I always stayed and tried to get as much ring time as possible with Homicide. And he would kick the fucking shit out of you. Like, literally, he would just shoot wrestle with you the whole time and pretty much just beat you up and took you tapped out. And that was, like, really fucking awesome.
Right. Yeah, I'd imagine. Homicide's definitely, one of the hardest-hitting guys on the indies. So,
yeah, he was testing guys back then. I mean, but that was how you had to do it, you know what I mean? And he was, like, one of my favorite wrestlers. Like I idolized the guy. So to even be in the same ring with him at, like, 14, 15 years old, it meant a lot to me.
Yeah. Back then, you know, when you were training and, you know, the time before you were training, were you watching a lot of indies, and what were you watching?
Yeah, what happened was I was really into ECW. ECW went out of business. You know, WWF was still, you know, doing pretty well in 2001. And then there was an RF video stand in my mall where I lived at. And there was, like, kids that worked at the stand. And Monster Mac from the Hit Squad actually worked in the stand, too. And there was an ICW show that was going to happen in Staten Island. We used to have this place in Staten Island called Fun Bubble. It was like this big sports kind of complex under like one of those big white air bubbles. And ECW used to run shows there. So they told me that there was a show. They gave me a flyer. They said, this, and that. Be there. It's going to be awesome. There's this guy, Loki. He's great. He's wrestling this guy, Amazing Red. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm going to go. I went with my friend. And that was pretty much it. That changed like everything for me. And then I met some people at the show who I ended up backyarding with, and they were like, oh, we go to these shows in Bayonne, New Jersey called Jersey All-Pro Wrestling. You should come with us. So I started going to those shows, and from the mix of that plus the stand in the mall and getting into Japanese wrestling kind of all at the same time, it was like my whole world just kind of opened up at once. And it's like I tell people this, and it's the truth, God honest. I didn't watch the WWF from about maybe 2001, like, on. I have not consciously watched television wrestling on a week-to-week basis since I was about 14 years old. I've seen matches on DVD and stuff that was recommended that I had to see over the years, you know, Kurt Angle and Shawn Michaels and stuff in the 2000s and all that shit that I really like a lot. But I literally just almost completely stopped watching it, and I just went all the way into indie wrestling and Japanese wrestling.
All right. Now, when you created, you know, your style has changed a lot over the years too, but when you initially went into, you know, wrestling, what did you use as your influences for your style, or what kind of thing were you trying to put out there as far as, you know, what you did in the ring?
That's such an awesome question, because nobody ever asked that question, and I think about that all the time. It's like, when I first started, I didn't know, like, who or what I wanted to be. Like, when I was backyarding and I first started wrestling, I wanted to be like Homicide. I wanted to be like the Hit Squad. I wanted to be like Loki. I wanted to be like Kenny Kobashi. Like, you know, I wanted to be like the guys that I really was into, like, initially, that made me, that I felt like I related with, you know, as in my character, in my attitude. But then I started training at Chikara, and I started watching a lot of, like, 90s New Japan Junior League stuff. So I was like, wow, I want to get into learning more, like, Lucha Libre and, you know, catch wrestling and stuff like that. So I started training at Chikara by the time I was around 16 years old when they kind of first started. This time there, and I learned a lot of Lucha Libre things, and I was a lot smaller, a lot more agile because I was basically a kid. So I used to try to do a little bit of everything. It was almost like I was kind of a blank canvas, and I was just trying all these different things, but I didn't really know who I was. But I always kind of wanted to be like a hard-hitting kind of, you know, strong style or All Japan, like King's Road style wrestler. I always kind of wanted that. But, you know, that being able to do that and do it well and do it safely, it takes a long time. Like, a lot of guys that do that stuff, you know, that do it well, they've been doing it for a very long time. Like, there's a lot of tricks to the trade that come along with that. You know, people always say you have a Chris Dickinson has a reputation. I hate saying this because it almost gives it away. But it's like, I've never actually hurt anyone in a wrestling match ever. Like, you know, striking or doing anything like that. There is, like, a sweet science to the style. It isn't just all like, all right, you go in the ring and you start fucking kicking somebody in the face as hard as you possibly can. You know, when I was younger, I wanted to, I didn't know really what I wanted. I wanted to be a lot of different things. I had to feel myself out. And then when I started, you know, getting kind of booked, I still didn't know. This is when I was like maybe even 19, 20 years old. I still didn't know what I wanted to do. And then I remember there was like a key point where I said to myself, well, you know, go back to what you always wanted to be and just don't hold back. And, you know, do what you wanted. And it was, and that was going with, you know, just hard hitting, you know, head fucking drops, suplexes, power moves, and just trying to go with that. And this was around the time I started to get smartened up to what was going on in Japan at the time. So, you know, the doors opened up to me for, like, Kenta and the pro wrestling Noah stuff that was happening. And I was just like, they have taken everything I loved about this style of wrestling and taken it to a whole new level. I mean, guys like Kenta, Kenta Saki, No Shizaki, obviously Kenta Kobashi. I mean, these guys were like, I was like glued to their stuff at the time because I had never seen anything so fucking brutal. And when I started doing like Beyond Wrestling in 2009 and 2010, I was kind of really patterning myself after that. But still, you're always trying to find who you really are. That wasn't completely who I am, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. When did you actually start wrestling in Jersey All Pro? Because I know you said you trained there early on. When were you actually being featured on the shows?
In 2008, I started getting booked on Jersey All Pro wrestling shows.
Oh wow! So you're training there for a long time and not being put on the shows, or?
Well, the thing is, the school kind of disbanded around after 2001. It came back for a little short period in 2002, and then it kind of went away again. It all had to do with the governor at the time of New Jersey had an issue with the building and the wrestling in New Jersey and blah, blah, blah. So Jersey All-Pro didn't have a school anymore. So all they did was one show. And I remember being so fucking heartbroken because I was going to debut on one of the student shows. And I was only like 15 years old. And me and my friends went to every Jersey All-Pro show, and it was like the biggest deal. I was going to debut on a student show at the Charity Hall they owned. And then it was like, boom, the show got canceled, the building got closed. And I didn't get started with JP until way after when I started wrestling again, like 2008. But to me personally, that was like a huge honor to really start from the bottom of JP, still being like really green, and then, you know, 2 years later, I was wrestling in the main event for the tag titles. Like, you know, we were being Sammy Gallagher's champions again. Basically, two guys that got me into indie wrestling, you know, in the first place, the Hit Squad. But, to be able to do all that in Jersey All Pro Wrestling, to me, was like a really big deal.
Right. Now, you know, you had talked about Beyond Wrestling. I guess you started working there before, you know, you started working at Jersey All Pro. Now, I'm not
actually,
completely knowledgeable.
I had done Jersey All Pro for a year before I did Beyond Wrestling.
Oh, okay. Okay. Now, Beyond Wrestling, I believe, was started, you know, with the concept of, like, no fans, you know, that type of situation. Was that awkward, wrestling that way, or?
It was at first. Like, I remember when we got to the building and it was all set up, you know, it was what it was. It wasn't too awkward because I was so I trained so much when I was younger that I was so used to wrestling so much more in front of nobody than I was in front of wrestling in front of people, you know? So I remember maybe not having an idea of how serious the project was, but all I cared about was, like, I'm going to do really well because I had an opportunity to go someplace I'd never gone before, whether it was in front of no fans or whether it was in front of the boys or whether it was in front of whoever. I was going to get do my best. I was really pumped up at the time, and I had a lot to prove, I felt, you know? So it was irrelevant to me if there were fans or not, you know?
Right. Yeah, you know, seeing that, to me, it was like a really interesting concept because, I mean, you see so many wrestlers that pretty much, you know, completely feed off of crowd reaction. I mean, you see some guys that, you know, if the crowd's not live, they don't, you know, they don't put it all out there, you know. So
yeah.
Just having guys have to go out there and just put their product out and, hey, man, the fans will, you know, they'll judge it later on. They'll see it, you know, it's you're just going to go out and do your thing. I don't know. It's a very interesting concept to me.
I always looked at it like this when it came to the studio taping, especially in the early days. Put it this way. I mean, there's a lot of guys who will say, oh, that's dumb, that's dumb. Well, in my opinion, you're just fucking lazy. It's because, in my opinion, you got the best fans who know the deal watching you right there. Their opinion probably matters more so than the fans' opinion. And you know what? They're going to be the ones who, if you could get a reaction out of them, you could definitely get a reaction out of the fans. It's a Brian Pillman mentality that I try to follow with almost everything I do when it comes to pro wrestling. Brian Pillman worked the boys. If Brian Pillman worked the boys, then you bet your ass he was going to be working the fucking fans. You know what I'm saying? If the people who are smartened up to what really goes on are believing in what you're doing, whether it be because you're performing with a lot of conviction or you're doing something that has them believing that it is what it is, you're doing a good job. End of story. If the boys can believe that what you're doing is true, then the fans can definitely believe that what you're doing is true. Everybody understands that wrestling is fake. We all know that. But the thing is, you're supposed to suspend people's, you know, imagination into believing, yeah, you know, I understand that this may not be completely real, but that guy really cares about what's going on right now. And you know, the people that are able to transcend that and show the fans that are the ones that I feel are the best wrestlers, and usually they are the most successful.
Yeah. Yeah, very understandable. I think it was in Jersey All Pro. I remember seeing years ago that you wrestled the Necro Butcher.
Was it
Jersey
absolutely.
All Pro?
What
was that like,
I mean, it was awesome because I had a match scheduled with Davey Richards for AIW in Cleveland, and Davey Richards couldn't make it for whatever reason, and the Necro Butcher was the surprise opponent, and this is the first time we ever met, and we just tore the building apart. I mean, it was one of those matches where people were like, oh, let's see if Dickinson is tough enough to hang with the Necro Butcher. And, you know, we just fucking rocked it. We killed each other. We had a solid match. It was one of my favorite matches I've ever had. And, mm-hmm. you know, I was able to form a relationship and a feud with Dylan that went on for years, and we've had four matches. So the wow. Jersey All-Pro one was our second meeting, and that one was a lot of fun, too. I have absolutely nothing but good things to say about Dylan. He is one of the toughest fucking Cro-Magnon human beings on the face of the earth.
Yeah, he's definitely badass, and you know, beyond the deathmatch persona and everything like that. I mean, I've heard a ton and ton of workers just say like how really, really smart that guy is in the ring, and just overall.
Absolutely, like I mean, the guy he taught me things when I wrestled him. Absolutely, I mean, the guy has a hell of a lot more experience than pretty much everyone on the indie scene. Like he's done it all. He's wrestled pretty much all over the world. He's had every kind of match you possibly be in. You know, worked under severe conditions where he's been physically hurt seriously and still continued. I mean, he's pretty much been there, done that when it comes to everything, you know. And he's almost like a modern-day type of Bruiser Brody or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, he does
oh, yeah.
his thing. He's completely independent, and he still always finds a way to stay relevant. And that is a very hard thing to do in 2013.
Another thing I wanted to ask you is, I mean, something that, you know, was all over the internet, and, you know, I've had a bunch of, you know, different people talk about it and stuff like that, and I always wanted to get your perspective on, you know, the situation. What exactly, you know, was the situation with Hot Stuff Fernandez that happened in Jersey All-Pro?
Oh, I mean, plain and simple. The guy was like a real bitter douchebag, and the thing is, I have heard dozens of the same types of stories about this guy. And I've never even brought the guy up, but like I'll be around with some dudes from Texas, because that's where he's from, and I'll
right.
hear shit about the guy just being a total cunt and being a total pussy too, you know, for as big as he is. Basically, the guy was trying to fucking haze on me. One night in the locker room at Jersey All-Pro, I'm sitting in my chair, I'm not even looking in his direction. The dude tries to piss on my fucking leg, takes his dick out and tries to piss on my fucking leg. I get the fuck up, and I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? This is fucking bullshit. Like, you know, I was like, yo, if you're going to fucking fight me, just fucking fight me, hit me, motherfucker. Let's fucking do it. And you know what?
Right.
The guy didn't do jack shit, man.
Yeah.
And I fucking walked out. I said to myself, this isn't even fucking worth it. And I didn't wrestle for Jersey All-Pro for fucking fun. Almost close to a year. I said to everybody there, I was like, fuck y'all, you're all a bunch of fucking bullshit motherfuckers. And I told the guy who was booking me at the time, who brought people in, I was like, this is just absolutely ridiculous. I understand I'm fucking green, and I was breaking in. And you know what? That shit happened, okay? Looking back on it, it really wasn't that big of a deal, and I really don't give a fuck about it.
Right.
I think I more than proved myself to a lot of snakes in that locker room who, you know, were fucking real cunty and real wordy and mouthy backstage, you know, that I wasn't fucking around, because I went back, you know, I was the main event at their fucking anniversary show. I was one of their fucking top guys at the time. And I pretty much, like, you know, outdid 90% of the guys that all fucking talk shit about me, because I was the green guy that got booked on shows and they weren't. And it was just like, you know, whatever. And the part that really fucking makes me laugh is, I'm not going to name any names, but, you know, people who are supposed to be his friends, his crew, his tag partners, people, you know who they are, all fucking
right.
told me themselves one at a time. You know what? That guy's a fucking asshole. He's a piece of shit. And, you know, nobody really fucking cared about it, or nobody liked what he did. You know what I'm saying? And I had
right.
some guys come to me and be like, I've had my Darren Moss come to me. Be like, you know, Dick, I would have pulled you out of there. I would have fucking defended you this match. And I'm like, don't worry about it, man. It all worked out the way it was supposed to work out. I'm my own guy. I stand my own ground. I can defend myself. That's just how I am. You know, not that I don't think that's a respectful gesture or nothing, but the fact is, Bago is a douchebag. Who the fuck is Huck Hernandez? You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't
right.
really care. I don't really care about the guy or whatever it is. I don't have beef with him or whatever it is. It's just like, you know, if I knew you, if I respected you, if I came up, you know, trying to follow in your footsteps like I did with guys like Moss, Speed Mac, Homicide, Loki. You know, those guys, you know, they took liberties with me. They smacked me around. They spit me. They fucking beat the crap out of me. They told me what it was about. But they never fucking, you know, treated me like a piece of garbage. You know, who the fuck
right.
was this Jabroni? Like, you know what I mean? But it's all water
right.
under the bridge, you know? It is what it is. And you know what? I heard so many stories about that guy. Just, like, where to basically get his fucking throat slit. And he's, like, crying.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
I always thought it was fucked up.
You know, man, what doesn't kill you only makes you stronger. And I'll tell you right now. That fucking situation, though, it really doesn't make a difference anymore. That shit made a monster out of me. Like, I was hell-bent on going back there and just shutting every detractor up so fucking hard, man. And you know what? I felt like I did a decent job.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, going forward, and Jersey All-Pro, like you said, you teamed up with Sami Callihan, the United States Death Machine. You know, how did that all come about, you know, and how did you like the pairing and everything like that?
So what happened was we actually wrestled each other in a singles match. And, like, at the time for me, I mean, this was right before Sami was really heating up. And we had a crazy match. Like, you know, usually I never liked anything I did, especially back then. I loved that match. We had a really good match. And, like, he got, like, lost in the shuffle, and Jersey All-Pro didn't take the show or some fucking complete nonsense bogus shit. And then they were like, oh, so let's make you guys a tag team. So they just made us a tag team out of nowhere, and that was it. We just became a tag team, and we kind of clicked and started throwing ideas off of each other. And that was it. You know, we had matches, we won the belts. Of the titles,
with the
squad, it was dope.
Yeah. So, you know, what was it like, you know, going forward from that, like you said, main eventing against the Hit Squad, you and Sami, and yeah, I was there live for the match. It was one of those things.
Yeah, it was awesome. Like, at that time, I was on a roll for where I was at. I mean, Beyond was doing good at the time. Beyond was doing what Beyond does. I was a champion at AIW. I was wrestling for a call. I had done some Dragon Gate. I had done FIP. I was Jersey All-Pro. I mean, I was wrestling all the time. Like, pretty much, I had a little part-time job, and I wrestled, and that was it. I went wherever I could, whenever I could, and that was what I did. And, I got basically in touch with WSW Germany, and I put together with them. They were interested in having me over for a tour to do a couple shows, and then they were going to send me to Dixon's in England, and I was going to basically be in Europe for like 2 months, just working the Dixon's grounds in England, which is kind of like this camp thing where they do like 5 shows a week, and then I was going to fly back to Germany and do the shows there that WSW wanted to use me on. So that was like, oh, awesome. Like, finally, like, you know, this is all really coming together. I had that. I was actually talking to Zero One at the time. I had some things, like, really happening for me. I was really fucking happy. It was, things were going well. And then when WSW came to America to do a little American Loop shows, it was the best of the best weekend. I hurt myself. I blew my knee out. And I tore my ACL and my cartilage, so I had to take like a year and a half off. So I had to get full recovery. I had to get full recovery surgery. I had to get my ACL repaired and all this stuff. So it was like, you know what? I'm kind of just gonna chill out for a little while and go see what I've been missing in my life. And that's what I did. You know, I took care of myself and I got in the gym like hardcore, like a motherfucker. That was what I wanted to do. You know, I got in the gym. And I got into bodybuilding and powerlifting.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that's definitely one thing you've done is, I mean, you've pretty much doubled in size from that that United States Death Machine period till now.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
What was it that you were doing? Obviously, you know, I mean, you know, the internet and everybody's going to talk and they're going to steroids this and this and this, but, you know, what did you do?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have no problem fucking talking about that stuff. But what I did was, I mean, that didn't really, all in all, that don't mean shit. I mean, I had my knee completely blown out to the point where, you know, when I went to get it looked like an MRI, they had to take about 20 full-size which is your cartilage. Like, we definitely are going to fix your ACL, but we don't know if we can save any of the cartilage in your knee. The tears look really bad. But we won't know for sure until we actually open up your knee. So I was like, whatever, it is what it is. So I was already kind of getting into training harder and getting into, you know, that, like, getting into getting bigger around the time I hurt my knee. So it was kind of like a setback. But all it really did was just give me time. Because I got cut open, I got surgery, and your leg, just from having the nerves shut off for a while, like, you can't move your calf muscles, you can't use anything. So my left leg literally got a lot smaller than my right leg. And they were like, listen, don't take anything or do anything for at least a month after your surgery. Just chill out, eat good, eat a lot of food, try to keep your weight up, and get to the gym when you can. I mean, I was in the gym 2 weeks after my surgery, already basically doing upper body and going to physical therapy every day. I was fortunate because where I live, in Staten Island, we got one of the best orthopedic surgeons and physical therapy offices in the world. Like, the guy that did my surgery was one of the orthopedic surgeons for the New York Yankees. So I was in his office taking physical therapy done every day, going to the gym at night, doing more time on the bike to loosen up my leg, you know, doing upper body and just training. And then once I was able to walk again without the crutches, I was like, all right, how long? And they were like, okay, it's going to take you maybe this many months so you can squat again, but you could start deadlifting sooner, and you could definitely leg break. So I focused my workouts around deadlifting and leg press, because I would do my legs, you know, almost like in the same way I was doing physical therapy. I wouldn't blast them hardcore every day, but, like, I was doing at least, like, two really crazy heavy workouts of deadlift and leg press twice a week during, like, the recovery period when I was trying to get bigger. And basically, I follow basic bodybuilding, powerlifting, you know, style. Compound movement, free weights, you know, machines sparingly, you know, no more than four exercises, potatoes, 3-4 sets. You know, it depends on how I feel. If I feel like I'm going to go heavy, I'm going to go heavy. If I feel like I'm going to go really heavy, I'm going to go really heavy. I'll switch things up, and I'll do, like, maxed out set. Maybe, like, I'll do a warm-up and then max out twice and do working set on, like, one of my big compound lifts, like a bench, a dead, or a squat. But at the time, I mean, it took me literally not even 2 months after my surgery to get back to deadlifting, like, 450 pounds. Like, I was really sucking trip to the point where it was all I had to do. I didn't have to work. I didn't have to work. I didn't have anything else to do but eat, train, and sleep. And I was just so motivated to get myself back together, you know?
You know, now, you know, another thing that happened too, you know, that was like a big, you know, controversial thing, and I watched it online, and I could definitely see where, you know, what happened, but the ISW match with Jaka, you know, the whole riot situation. Do you want to break down that situation? I mean, it's pretty obvious on, you know, if you watch it, but.
Oh, yeah, you know what? And I'm happy that they kept it in there. You know, the thing is, me and Jocko were working our match, and what happened with the table, when he dove on me and the table broke, we didn't intend on breaking anybody's table. I mean, I'm a big boy. I'm about, you know, 235 on a good day. Jocko's a thick dude. He's about 230, 235. He's about the same size as me. He's a little shorter, but he's thick. So Jocko dove on me. I caught him, and, like, we launched and fell backwards, and he landed on the table, and the table broke. So, we weren't planning on breaking the table, but the guy who was selling merch on the table decided to come over to me and kick me in the back of the head. And you can see it on the video. You can see it on the video. If you pay attention, you can see it on the video. Now, I mean, once I felt that, I felt the dude kick me in the back of the head. I was like, yo, somebody just really fucking kicked me. I got right up and I looked right in the motherfucker's eyes. And I was like, you fucking swat. And, I mean, what was I going to do, you know? Like, what happened after that? Guy was an asshole. and you know, as far as a personal thing with the guy, absolutely not. He seemed to have a problem with me because of, like, something. He was supposed to go to a show with me once, and I was supposed to drive him. And this man, like, and I didn't drive him. Like, dude, that guy is a fucking, it's a typical, you know, part of the typical demographic in indie wrestling of guys who suck fucking balls and have to basically start their own little wrestling companies and their own little wrestling school, put themselves over to make themselves feel like they're relevant. And, you know, they'll look like some ex-washed-up WWF loser to come and wrestle them, you know, just to make themselves look cool in front of their friends. And he was there hawking his gimmicks that night and decided to just start a fight for no reason. And all he fucking did was just give my match more fucking heat.
Yeah, I mean, you guys pulled out a great match. I mean, it was, you know, great up until that point. There was obviously the big stoppage, and it was kind of funny, too, because you could see the two of you are now, you know, you're just going to battle, and, you know, kayfabe goes aside, and you guys are both standing there, like,
stupid,
what the fuck?
Yeah. I felt like so shitty. I was like, oh, great, this fucking match is over. But I noticed, I was like, oh, well, nobody ever rang the bell, though. All right, nobody rang the bell, we're good. So, like, I grabbed a chair. And I was like, all right, maybe I'll just hit Jock in the stomach with a chair or something. And then it was like he rolled back into the ring, and I was like, we literally picked up exactly where we left off. We didn't miss a beat. It was awesome.
Yeah. Was that the end of you working there, or because I really don't know about that much about that company?
No. I'm actually wrestling on the ISW's upcoming event. And at the same place, the Errol Marks here, it's going to be me and Vicky Sanchez one-on-one.
Oh, okay. I'd also tell
you
wrestled...
If you want me to talk more into it, after the incident, you know, everybody was a little like, well, what happened? Well, we don't know. Did he really kick you? Did he not? I was, like, worried, like, oh, they're not going to have him, you know, we screwed
right.
up, blah, blah, blah. But then it was, like, clear as fucking day when you see the tape. It was like, this guy basically attacked me when I was down.
Right. Yeah, you definitely can't do this shit. Another guy I saw you wrestle, too, who's, you know, having huge success in Japan and everything else, UHA Nation. What was it like wrestling him?
Oh, UHA was awesome. That guy is a great athlete. He's fucking jacked. I mean, you're staring at that guy in the ring, and you're looking at his chest, and it's just like, damn, this guy is solid as a rock. He's got ups. He can jump like so fucking high. But he's a really good wrestler. I have a lot of respect for him. I'm glad that he's over in Japan, just doing his thing. I mean, he is doing the real deal, like over there, like just the tours after tour after tour, like so. Whatever it is, man, good for him because he deserves it. He's one of those guys where, you know, you don't get it too high, though. You know, it's good for him that
sure.
he's able to find a niche doing what he does.
Sure. There's another thing, again, I really don't know much about the company, but, you know, I read the little message boards here and there, and, you know, they had some kind of issue with you and AIW, and, you know, some of the, you know, the owners of it have a lot to say about you and stuff on the message boards. You know, what's your whole
thing? They're cool, like, with me. They just they weren't paying me what I wanted, and the right situation went awry for the show. They never fucking reached out to contact me. You know, and we're just trying to, like, use a middleman. I wasn't cool
mm-hmm.
about that. So,
right.
you know, I'm not, first of all, we had an agreement from months and months ago. I stuck to it, and I did them a favor because, you know, I had missed a show that I shouldn't have missed, and they still honored my booking and my comeback and my story. So, after months and months of being one of the most relevant pieces on the show, being in a big feud with BJ Whitmer, getting that, you know, pushed and putting so much into it, going into our fucking blow-off, you know, you would think that these guys who have apparently so much conviction for their product, they really believe in AIW, would believe, you know, that we need to get Chris Dickinson on the phone and see what the deal is because we know something's wrong. And if he doesn't come, that should be a problem, but I don't think to them at the time they thought it was a problem. So, testing me or if I was testing them, but the end result was that I just didn't go to the show, you know?
Right. All right. You know, recently you got into CZW. I mean, it seemed like a, you know, pretty good fit for you, and, you know, you debuted, you know, running in on a Tournament of Death against, you know, up against Masada and, you know, Gulak and, starting it out there. What was your thoughts going into CZW?
My thoughts going into CZW, like anything else, is like one step at a time. One step at a time. We'll see how this all pans out. Just try to give 100% to the best I possibly can every single time. Whatever you get to do, whatever, you know, you're supposed to be doing that night, do it to the best of your abilities, no matter what the situation is. And, you know, I'm sure at first with CZW, maybe because I was put into such a big spot so fast, you know, working with some of the top guys, you know, revolving around the championship, you know, people obviously are going to snicker at that, and the fans aren't going to really, like, take to it. It's because they're going to be like, well, you know, you haven't been here that long. What reason should we have to, you know, to believe in you as a formidable, you know, contender for the title? But,
right.
You know, given the right players, the right story, in the right environment, like you said earlier, you know, you're able to, I was able to show what I'm capable of. And I'm telling you right now, you know, from where I started with Tournament of Death until now, I mean, CZW is like my favorite place to work. I mean, the crowd there, that Philly crowd, I mean, I still see the crowd even if the shows are in Portland, New Jersey. The Philly crowd, you know, those CZW fans are the hardest fans to win over.
Sure. Yeah.
The diehard there for years, you know, it's hard to really win their pull. So,
yeah, I'm going to go into, you know, a few of those matches, too, if you've had there since. But before that, going in, you know, running in a Tournament of Death, you know, what is your thought on deathmatch wrestling? And, you know, is that something that you're even interested in doing anytime in the future? Or, you know, obviously you were just doing a run-in, but, you know, that's the mecca of deathmatch wrestling that you had your debut at. Yeah? I'm not sure. I might have lost Chris here. Let me see. I'm not hearing him. All right, yeah, the call dropped, so I'm hoping he's going to call back. And, got a little choppy, and then, okay, I think he's calling back in. Here we go.
I'm on. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm there.
Yeah, sorry,
you dropped
I'm
off.
Kinda,
you're back.
Yeah, I'm headed towards the GWP right now.
Okay.
But like I was saying, yeah, like the fans that go all the time, you can't do nothing but respect those guys because they pay their money every month to go. They buy T-shirts, you know. And CZW's got a younger crowd too. There's kids there that I mean have come up to me and they have spoken with such conviction. You know, and they're fans. They're maybe like early teens, you know, or like just started high school. And they tell me, like, I listened to you on this podcast, or I heard what you said about Ring of Honor in that interview, and I'm with you. I really like you. And they ask you for your autograph. They bring, like, your dad over and all that stuff. And that stuff to me, it really means a lot because I was that kid at one point, too. So to be able to do that at CZW and connect with those people who are, you know, they're really a pretty wrestling savvy crowd. It means a lot to me.
Sure. Now, what I'd ask you, it dropped off, but, you made your debut over there running in at Tournament of Death. Now, what's your thoughts on deathmatch wrestling? Is that something you ever, you know, considered? Or, you know, of course you just made a run-in, but it was at, you know, the mecca of deathmatch wrestling and everything. What's your thoughts on that?
The thing is, I've touched on it. I've done, like, death matches, but it wasn't really anything that you could call insane. I mean, I've taken, like, tubes. I've done some barbed wire and all that stuff. I've done a lot of hardcore matches. You can definitely say that. Decision for me. If it calls for it, if my heart and my convictions into it, I'll definitely do it. It's just, you know, like anything else, I'm not saying I won't do it, but I'm not saying I'm super gung-ho about doing it. But, you know, sometimes I'm not going to lie. Like, the thought of, you know, giving somebody a crazy sit-out crucifix powerbomb through, like, three panes of glass doesn't go through my mind and make me smile. You know, the thought about like whacking somebody across the head with a light tube, or like, you know, the thought of like getting power bombs through like four fucking tables with like barbed wire on them doesn't get my jollies off in some way, shape, or form. You know, I'm not completely right myself. So, you know, I can't say I'm like on that level of a Matt Tremont or a Danny Havoc or you know, Masada, where it's like, this is what these guys do, that's their thing. But,
right.
You know, I'm not saying I won't, you know.
Cool. Now, you know, the thing that I like about what you're doing in CZW, and, you know, I've said this before on my show, so I'll just repeat it, but CZW has lost a bunch of people over time, you know, from different situations, retirement and, you know, all sorts of situations. But what they're in desperate need of right now is a crusher. And, you know, at times it's been the Hate Club. At times it's been Wifebeater or Zandig himself or so many different people. And even though it's not, like, within the ultra-violent, you know, realm of things, you're kind of playing that role of the guy that's going to come in and just fuck somebody up. And that's something the CZW crowd is always, like, heavily, heavily fed into. And, that's part of what I really like about what you're doing there right now.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Now, the match that you had with Drew Gulak, just a big fan of that match. Again, I wasn't really sure how Drew was going to be as world champion of CZW. I mean, Drew, you know, I've seen him since he first came up in CZW, and, you know, he's a very, very talented wrestler. But being that more of a pure wrestling heel holding the CZW world title, especially following Masada, was really, you know, wondering how it was going to come off. And to kick off the title reign, wrestling you and you just more or less trying to kill him in the ring, it just came off really well. What was your thoughts on that match?
The thing is about Drew, and I wrestled Drew a few times now, the thing is about Drew is he is a wrestler's wrestler. You know,
mm-hmm.
even though maybe he doesn't follow the prototypical ultra-violent mold, I mean, he's the type of guy that wouldn't be a world champion. I mean, you know, he has all the intangibles, and the guy can go, and he's tough as fucking nail. And, you know,
sure.
If those fans, to the match I had with him at CZW, then, I mean, I don't know what else I'm going to have to do. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
That, you know, I tried to give him a run for his money. And the thing is, yeah, sure, he's been in the company a lot longer than me. He's the world champion. I haven't been there that long. But you know what? When it all comes down to it, that shit don't make a difference. We're still two
right.
men. It's still a wrestling ring, and we're going to do it. And if I feel like I'm going to give the champ a run for his money and see how tough the champ is, like, you know, that's just how it's going to be. So, and I'll tell you, you know, the kid holds his own. You know, when I first started working Drew, maybe even before CZW, maybe I didn't know how tough he was, but I'll tell you right now, that kid, I have put that kid down, and he just keeps coming after me. He just he picks a limp, and I'm not even trying to work right now, because me and Drew, when we go in, we go. There ain't much talked about, if you know what I'm saying. There ain't much talked about. We just go in, Drew will keep coming after me, and he really, really, really is a great performer. Like, I mean, when it comes to, like, what he's doing at CZW, for instance, it's more than just, you know, the wrestling, obviously. He has the campaign. He has, you know, a little lot of characters around him. He has a female. He has an enforcer. He's kind of got, like, the doofy stooge guy. He's kind of got, like, the corporate-looking yummy guy. It's like he's got a couple different intangibles to work with the people on the outside. With the girl. You know, she's got her own thing going on. It's like, it's the complete package, you know what I mean? But I really found good and and well pulled off was when I was watching it on DVD, was at the end of Via Masada's match at New Heights, when the campaign ran in on our match and jumped us. And, like, maybe the campaign seemed a little hokey at times, but you go and rewatch that run-in when they, like, take me out, take Masada, make him watch Christina Ranieri takes the most ruthless fucking reverse tombstone pile driver from Kimberly. I mean, they were just like, yo, this is like a heel faction. And it's like, if that doesn't make you believe in Drew and the campaign thing, I mean, I don't know what that is. So, I mean, I see him representing CCW as a good champion because of, you know, his ability to blend styles, you know?
Sure. Yeah, I never doubted his athletic ability whatsoever. I mean, I know, you know, I've seen him since back in the day when he was wearing headgear, getting, you know, the Hate Club just destroying him and stuff. So I definitely know that he's capable. It's just like I said, you know, just getting over with the fans. It's really kind of an uphill battle with the style that Drew works. And like I said, to go out there and get, you know, into such a physical match, that's the way to do it. I mean, that's absolutely the way to do it.
Oh, exactly. And the thing is, if you really believe in what you're doing, and you care, like I said before, you have conviction about what you're doing, then people are going to pick up on that, whether they like it or not, or whether if they do or they don't. They're going to pick up on it, and they're going to say, like, damn, this guy really gives a shit about what he's doing. And the thing about Drew is, like, he could get down and dirty, he could do it all. I'm the type of guy, I like to be able to exercise my ability to do anything in the ring. I want to hit crazy, ungodly power moves. I want to do Japanese-style head drops and suplexes. I want to be able to strike like a motherfucker. I want to get on the mat, I want to wrestle. I want to show that I can take to the air once in a while. I want to be a mixture of everything. And when you're wrestling with somebody like Drew, you know, that's almost like a lot to be able to do, you know what I mean? You feel like you have to call a million things or talk about all this stuff. He's the type of guy who understands it all, so it's just like smooth, man. Working with a guy like Drew can teach you a lot of things about being a pro wrestler.
Right. And then another guy you wrestled last show, A.R. Fox.
Same with Law Nation. But don't disrespect you. A.R. Fox, type of guy who only, someone like him only comes along every like 20 years or something. Like a guy who just is so revolutionary and so like groundbreaking with what he does that, you know, you scratch your head a little bit. There's detractors who think maybe it's too much, but then there's people who are like, this is unbelievable. He's just one of those guys. I mean, dude, I hit him with some of the craziest fucking moves I have ever hit anybody with. I gave him a German suplex where I launched him literally probably 5 or 6 feet into the air. I mean, you know, the kid is resilient. You know, people do not give him credit enough for his toughness. He takes some of the craziest bumps, you know, in professional wrestling that you'd ever see, and he still bounces back and is able to commit to the things that he wants to do. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it was another just absolutely great match. You know, what you call, I guess, like a Styles Clash match, and it just went down really, really well.
Yeah, the thing about Fox is, me and Fox, we come from the same background mentality. It's like, you know, who is your favorite? And you is like, you know, this age or that age. It's like, man, I'll tell you, maybe I may wrestle a little bit different, but you know, I got into wrestling because of Jerry Lynn and like Rob Van Dam, like it's taboo, like. It was the attitude, you know what I mean? The mentality of, like, the pushing it to the limit, going to the next level. You know, I may not be able to do all the flips that A.R. Fox does, or I may not be able to jump as high as A.R. Fox, but, like, damn, you know, if I can put a twist on something that's pretty fucking basic, or if I can make this suplex just be something completely extra, like, I'm going to do it. You know, I like to approach this with that same mentality of, like, taking things to the next level. It's because in 2013, you're not going to reinvent the wheel. You know what I mean? And the thing about A.R. Fox is, he does conventional, going to do a basic front flip. He's going to do that front flip, and it's going to look 10 times low-level Joe Schmo like me doing it. You know what I mean?
Right.
AR Fox forces guys, you know, he forced me. When I started really paying attention to Fox, it forces you to look at yourself and realize, like, damn, like, you gotta take a real tight grip on what you know you do well and try to do it the best you fucking can. It's because you're never going to be able to do what that guy does. You know what I mean?
Right.
Sure. More power to Fox, more respect to him, you know?
Yeah. You know, jumping around a little bit, but you know, I mentioned Kobashi, you know, a few times, and yeah, I know you're a big fan of the Japanese wrestling and everything like that. I had asked several people this because it's always like a question I like to ask for, you know, people I know that are watching like the Misawa matches. I don't even want to say what's better because it's all just preference. What's your preference? Misawa Kawada or Misawa Kobashi, and why?
Misawa Kobashi all day. I used to really like Kawada. When I was like 14, 15, I first got into it. I related with Kawada. It's because, you know, he threw kicks and he was, you know, martial arts style and really did what I was interested in. But what I was able to really relate more on and on years, the years went by, was like Kobashi's all overall performance, his conviction, his facials and his body language and his selling, and the timing between the moves. Misawa's, you know, athleticism, his athletic ability more so than like Kobashi and Kawada and Tao and Akiyama. Misawa was almost capable of doing more things than those guys. He was a little bit more versed. He could do a little bit more high-flying. He could do some more lucha-esque type things.
Mm-hmm.
Misawa took the craziest bumps ever. I mean, I'm pretty positive that Misawa was the guy who put, like, head drop bumping like that. Like, that type of bumping, he put that shit on the map. I mean, I've been watching a lot of old All Japan. And you're rewatching classics, things that I've watched over the years. I see Misawa take bumps that I am like, that was fucking ungodly. I mean, he takes things that are, it's like the guy whips himself so hard, you know, like so hard, where it's like, yo, damn, like this guy just got dropped on his head. But, I mean, it's unreal. And when him and Kobashi square off, it's just, like, I watched one of their classics, I think it was from, like, October 96, when Misawa takes the Triple Crown off Kobashi. I mean, Kobashi hits him with a sleeper suplex in, like, the last 10 minutes of the match. That I swear to God, I never seen anything like it in my life. It's just, it's like, how do you top that? How can I do that? I want to do that. Like, you know, it's crazy. It's unbelievable. But if you're going to say who do I like better, my two favorites, without a doubt, is Kobashi and Misawa.
Yeah. Yeah, understandable. And, you know, like I said, there's really no wrong answer. It's all about preference. I mean, both of those series of matches are just awesome. I prefer...
Go ahead. No, I'm just total. I'm saying absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I prefer the Kawada and Misawa matches just because, like you say, like the martial arts on one side and then, you know, what Misawa's doing on the other side. I just really like the blend of those two styles, like, within the match. But again, I mean, there's not a goddamn thing wrong with what Kobashi was doing.
What I liked Kawada mostly was in situations when he fought the Gaijin. It's because I have heard rumors that he didn't like Gaijin.
Right.
So I remember the first time I bought my RF video, Best of Vader in Japan, and I watched, like, the 99 run in All Japan when he went back to Japan after his fucking garbage WWF stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And Vader was, like, fucking reborn. He had the match he had with Kawada. I remember watching that shit, like, five nights a week and just thinking to myself, like, Jesus Christ. This is everything I want to do in a pro wrestling match and more. Like, this is insane. Like, Kawada would beat the shit out of the guy just, like, but then you get guys like Gordy and Williams, they fucking take it to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kawada.
Yeah, definitely.
And it was, and not a lot of people talk about Akiyama, but Akiyama, he was a very accomplished amateur wrestler, and he was fucking insane in the ring. I mean, I watched Akiyama give. I mean, him and Vader, dude. He was giving Vader like full, perfect, like picture perfect German suplex, like it was nothing. I mean, I remember one match. It was the classic. It's like Dr. Death and Vader versus Akiyama and Kobashi. And I mean, Dr. Death. I mean, he was one of the best fucking amateur wrestlers in the world at the time when he was in college. He basically was like Brock Lesnar before there was a Brock Lesnar.
Right.
Only he was such a fucking athlete that he was also Division fucking III football player who ended up becoming a pro. Like, I mean, he was just that much of a fucking animal. I remember watching him and Akiyama go at it. Like, and basically, they were shooting. Like, they were just going at it on the mat. Like, I'd never seen anything like it before in my life. It was, like, unreal. Like, that. It was like, wow, that is what, like, on the mat chain shoot wrestling is supposed to look like. Like, they were just going at each other so fucking hard, you know what I mean? Like, just making it
right.
Look so realistic. The guy who I put in that class, 100%, even though he started becoming more of a pro later on, after the 90s, was Minoru Suzuki. You know Minoru Suzuki?
Mm-hmm.
Minoru Suzuki, he was a shoot fighter. He was one of the guys who found a tank race. That guy was actually on the Olympic team reserve for Japan. So he was like a ridiculous fucking shooter and freestyle wrestler. You know, if you watch his matches in NOAH and All Japan, like in 2000, he went at it with everybody. His match with Kobashi is one of my favorite matches ever. But he had a crazy one with Akiyama. You should check, and he had a pretty much a crazy match with everybody. You should check him out.
Yeah, I'll definitely check out some more of that. What were some of your favorite opponents over the years? Like, if you had to, you know, one guy, you know, if you got in the ring with, it was pretty much just, you know, the chemistry alone, you knew it was just going to be a good match, no matter what the situation.
Yeah, hello?
Yeah.
Yeah,
you hear my question?
For a minute.
Who would be the opponent if, you know, you had the perfect chemistry with, you knew that no matter what the situation, you got in the ring and it was just going to go well, just easy chemistry-wise? You there? Breaking up, I can't hear you.
Are you there?
Yeah, I can hear you now. I can't hear you now. all right, let me see. He must be in a bad area. I think the call dropped again. Hopefully he'll call back in a minute. You know, line will be clear again. So we'll see. You know, he's got to make moves. You know, he's taking a drive. So, you know, you go in and out of reception. Happens. Said before, he's going over a bridge in New York over there. So, you know. Try to give it a minute, give him a call back, and then, you know, some more of these questions in there. Just going to see what happens. There we go. I think he's calling back in now. All right. All right, you there?
Yeah, sorry, man. The fucking turnpike.
It's all good. So I was saying was, you know, what would you say the opponent is that you would have, that you'd have chemistry? Like, no matter what the match was, you were going to get in there. It was going to pretty much flow like your go-to opponent.
And this is somebody I never wrestled before?
No. Like, you know, a guy who, you know, one of your best opponents as far as, like, you knew you were just, you had the chemistry with him and it was just going to go well easy.
Well, obviously, I got to go with Jocka. He's definitely... One of my favorite guys because I've known him since I was 7 years old. You know, the whole thing of becoming a professional wrestler, we've basically done this together.
Mm-hmm.
So Jocka definitely, but without a shadow of a doubt, Drew Gulak. I mean, my chemistry with Drew is unreal in my opinion. I mean, like I said,
right.
I just show up to the building, like I'm late, I'm stuck in traffic, I'm getting dressed in the car. My music's hitting, I'm still in the car, Drew's in the ring. I'm not worried. You know what I mean? I'm not worried in the slightest.
Right.
I'm not trying to sound arrogant or anything like that. That's not what I'm trying to say. I'm just saying, like, you asked the question, who I feel like I have great chemistry with. That's somebody I feel like I have great chemistry with.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Who were some of the dream matches that you haven't had yet that you would hope to, you know, wrestle?
I never had a singles match with Dan Mop. And Dan Mop is, like, one of the guys that I really feel...
Breaking up a little bit. All right, let me see. Yeah, dropped again. All right. It's on the turnpike. It's bad goings on the turnpike. So we'll see. Hopefully we can get him back. A little better reception. Got a few more questions here. Go over and then... All right, there he goes. All right, you're back?
Oh, yeah, sorry, man. I've had...
Yeah, turnpike's killing me.
sorry. I'm driving past the air. I'm about to be home. But, Dan Mop, I mean, definitely, I always say this, and people are always like, that's, like, last, but, I mean, I wanted to wrestle Super Dragon so bad when I was younger.
Right.
As far as, like, you know, maybe bigger, I mean, one of my dream matches would be to wrestle Kurt Angle, without a doubt, Kurt Angle. Out of guys in Japan, definitely Kenta. Definitely someone like Go Shibaki. I would have died to wrestle Kenta Kobashi, but he's retired now. Good for him. Minoru Suzuki. Daisuke Sekimoto. And it's funny because, you know, I train at the CCW school, I'm always around. You know, you always, the connection with Big Japan Pro Wrestling. Like, DJ and them are always bringing up, like, oh, like, you know, you look big, but Daisuke Sekimoto looks really big, or, you know, of course I want to wrestle Daisuke Sekimoto. So, getting the capacity to know it's your name, like, you guys would hit it off, blah, blah. It's like, oh, yeah, all right, cool, awesome. Another guy, of course, who always gets intertwined with, like, all those cheesy things, like, who's stronger, Michael Elgin. You know, you got to see what that guy's all about eventually, right? Michael Elgin. I really want to wrestle Josh, too. Josh Alexander. I feel like he definitely is a budding star in the indie scene. He's got something that's going on that I really like. I mean, a dream match, dude, of course. Like, all the people that always fucking compare me to Loki forever. Of course I'd want to fucking wrestle Loki, man. I got a lot of detractors I need to shut the fuck up.
Right.
I mean, not to mention he's also one of the greatest and one of the best. So, but apparently he's retired, too. We all know nobody ever stays retired, but if that's so for him, good for him. Dude, you know, do what he's got to do. He's pretty much done everything there is to do. And his mantra, his professional wrestling, is something very rare in individuals in this day and age. And I respect the fuck out of it. So, if he's done, he's done. That's cool. I mean, I think about wrestling Samoa Joe a lot. Of course, Samoa Joe. Another name that always gets tossed around. Like, oh, imagine if you ever wrestled Samoa Joe. I mean, as far as guys, like, right now, who are really fucking hot, who I never got to work, you know? I don't know. I'm the type of guy who is like, I look at every match as a different opportunity. You know, I'm always looking at this, like, at a match as a different opportunity to maybe show something a little different about myself, but still stick to the same things that got me to the dance, you know?
Yeah. Now, you know, talk a little bit about the, you know, current product and everything like that. You know, I heard you on another show you were talking, and you seem to really, really dislike CM Punk. what's your deal there?
It's not so much. The thing is, like, don't mistake it dislike with not being a fan of, because personally, I don't know the guy. I don't know CM Punk. I've never never had any feelings of him or any interaction with him. So I personally can't tell you what he's like as a human being. But other people say he's a total douchebag, or he's a total piece of shit, or he burned me this, he burned me that. You know, obviously a guy of his position is going to get a lot of heat. You know, so we all know that. I'm the type of guy that when it comes to people who talk shit about other people who, you know, I always look at it both ways. I hear both sides of the story because personally, I don't know. If you didn't do anything to me, I'm not gonna judge you, you know.
Right.
But you know, as a wrestler, CM Punk just never did anything for me. When I was a fan of Ring of Honor and the Independence back in the day, he was like the last guy I stuck around to watch. Like I thought he was lame. You know, I think athletically non-existent. You know, physically nothing. Like, you know, he looks horrible. I mean, I guess if that's what they're going for nowadays, that's cool. I mean, I'm not saying I'm the fucking narcissist Lex Luger, but CM Punk just, you know, the guy don't even really look healthy, you know? And it's just like his wrestling is just like passed backwards. He doesn't do anything like anything too well, in my opinion. Like, I'm sorry. I guess I must sound like an asshole because I'm just this fucking lowly independent wrestler, and he makes, you know, squillions and squillions of dollars. But I mean, the proof is in the pudding, man. Like, this ain't about status, and this ain't about money. This is about pro wrestling. I mean, he hijacked Kenta's moveset. I mean, listen. I'm not saying I'm fucking Jackie Chan here or nothing, but, like, I studied martial arts my whole life. It was a big deal to me. And he fucking tries to throw, like, the most basic roundhouse kicks and just do these, like, martial arts MMA-esque things. They look like complete and total garbage. I would believe that my 3-year-old niece could punch him in the balls and debilitate him. You know?
He does
absolutely nothing with any sort of conviction. I mean, I watched him and Chris Jericho wrestle at WrestleMania, and I mean, he couldn't even do a fucking, he couldn't even reverse a waist lock without making it look like ass.
Yeah. I mean,
am I wrong?
You know,
am I wrong? Is there something I don't see?
I mean, I like the dude. I mean, you know, you're entitled to your opinion and everything. I mean, the thing to me, like, I just think, you know, promo-wise, I don't think there's many people in the business, you know, cutting better promos right now. And, you know, matches like he's put on with Cena, matches he's put on with, like, Brock Lesnar, the match you just had with him, I just thought was amazing. I mean, you know, I mean, maybe he's not exactly low-key as far as the kicks he's putting out and stuff like this. But I don't know. I think he does a pretty, you know, good, well-rounded thing out there. But again, man, it's, you know.
He must do something right. I mean, you know, come on. But then the stuff is that you do hear is from people who I respect the fuck out of, who say, like, he was a politicker and a real asshole and, you know, undermined people, had a huge ego, and was just really disrespectful. And if that's coming from people whose opinions, like, I kind of trust because, you know, I've been around with them and, you know, it was my first rodeo with them. You know what I'm saying?
Sure, sure.
If they're saying that, then it's like, I kind of got to believe it. It's because I can see it. I can see it 100%. You know, you don't get to the, unless you're prepared to step on a few toes and kiss a few ass. You know, that's just how you got to be. So, you know, if that's the way he is, if that makes him sleep good at night, whatever, that's perfectly fine. I'm not in pro wrestling for status. I'm not in pro wrestling to make $1 million, you know, and if that makes me less of a professional wrestler than what, you know, most people think I'm supposed to be, then go fuck yourself, you know? You don't live my life, you don't walk my shoes. But as far as the actual wrestling is concerned, like, he does all of Kenta's moves, all of it. And he does not do one of them nearly as convincing as Kenta. You know what I mean? Like, you're the fucking guy, and he doesn't do any one of those moves anywhere near as convincing as Kenta. So it's like, listen, man, if you're going to fucking do the guy's moves, the least you can do is try to do them halfway decent, you know? Hey, whatever, it's cool. It's cool. cool. Hey, you know what I do like about the guy? He gets a lot of pussy, right?
Yeah.
He gets a lot of pussy. He's always with one of those fucking chicks.
Yeah.
I bet you any amount of money, if I met the guy, I'd probably end up being his friend.
It is what it is. You know, I've definitely heard from other people that didn't like him personally. B.J. Whitmer doesn't like him. You know, there's definitely people that have issues with him personally.
No, I mean, listen, but the truth is, I'll probably never know. So it's all really just me sounding like a wrestling mark, talking like a wrestling mark. Like, oh, you know, I don't like this, I don't like that. So whatever, it's all funny games. But, I mean, that's just my opinion. Am I ever going out of my way really to watch a CM Punk match? Probably not.
All right. Besides the CM Punk, stuff, what's your thoughts on the current TV product?
I just think it's weak. I think it's weak. I think it's just so, it's so fake, so watered down. It's just so not exhilarating, you know? There are some aspects of it in the last few months that seems like, oh, it's gotten interesting. To someone like me, because there's people that I traveled with and worked with that are on television. So it's like, all right, this is kind of cool. Like, you know, I'm really happy for these guys. This is great. This is awesome. And they're doing something cool. But then it's just like, you know, it's like trying to find a, you know, I don't know. It's like surrounded by so much garbage. Like, it's being somebody who really loves pro wrestling, it just ain't about pro wrestling. You know what I mean?
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're like, ain't about it. They ain't about it. They're about what they want and what they want people to know. Like, it's so corporate. It's, like, so overbearingly corporate and obnoxious. It's like, listen, if we want them to think this, we're going to put out a DVD with everybody saying that. Like, you know, it's almost like it goes back to, like, that self-destruction of the Ultimate Warrior DVD. You know what I mean?
Right.
DVD influenced everybody into believing that the Ultimate Warrior was such a fuck-up and such a loser and such a this and such a that. It's like, are you kidding me? The Ultimate Warrior is probably still living off the money he made as a professional wrestler. He is a pop culture phenomenon. He was one of the biggest draws in the history of the WWF, and he's pretty much been more successful than probably 98% of anybody who's ever been considered a top star in the WWF. You know, he's in that fucking upper echelon, and he was able to walk away from professional wrestling, fail at other endeavors, and still walk away from it unscathed. I mean, you're gonna call that guy a professional wrestling fuck up and a professional wrestling failure because Ted DiBiase and bitter Ric Flair on the WWF DVD told you so? It's the stuff like that really bothers me about what they do. It's because they feel like they can completely control and manipulate everybody's opinion of what something is supposed to be like. You know, it's almost like they want every other thing ever that happened that was considered to be professional wrestling to be irrelevant. It's only what they want you to know. It's just like the fucking government.
You know? The thing about Warrior 2 that I'd agree. I mean, I was a kid. He was one of my favorite wrestlers straight up. I mean, his intensity was through the roof. His energy was, like, unmatched. I was the Ultimate Warrior for Halloween one year. I mean, the thing is
you know what? So was I.
And the thing is, you know, I think the intensity he brought, the energy he brought, and the amount of crowd reaction he got, people are still mad about it.
Yeah, dude, that's the thing, man. Everybody wants what they can't have. It's like, listen, the guy was fucking chiseled out of granite. He looked like a professional bodybuilder. He probably could have been a pro bodybuilder. He won in the Nationals. Do you know what a feat that is as a bodybuilder to do? He won in the Nationals. He was fucking huge. He had huge charisma. He could talk. He had a crazy look. he got what guys in the business don't get after being in it for like 20 years. That's the thing, man. Listen, I could sit here and talk to you all day about five-star classic All Japan pro wrestling matches and all this stuff. But the truth is, when it comes down to it, man, if you got it like the Warrior or somebody like Hulk Hogan, you know, that's something you just can't shit on. You know what I mean? Those guys had it. They had that it factor that made them special. And yeah, like, you know, people are going to say, like, Ultimate Warrior didn't put on wrestling clinics, but it's not like the Ultimate Warrior ever put on bad matches. It's like you knew what you were going to get. You watched it and you understood what was going on. I don't care what anybody said. Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan is one of the greatest fucking matches of all time. You cannot duplicate atmospheres like that. And that was one of, like, the times maybe you could count on one, maybe two hands, that there was an atmosphere right like that created. You know? Yeah, I mean, that's just how it is.
Yeah, and my thing too with the WWE product overall and what they do is I just think it all comes off too generic, and it's like they try to work the same style of match. There's no diversity, so there's no room for someone to really cut out their own niche, you know, in one style of wrestling. It's just everybody trying to do the same type of match and jam it into a 3-hour show. I don't know.
Yeah, it's extremely generic. Everybody looks the same. Everybody kind of, like, talks the same. Everybody acts the same. And then they bring, like, the outlandish, goofy characters. They try to be all PG and cute and appeal to everyone and the moms and dads. And it's like, you know, they just cater to what society is at that given moment. Like, Daniel Bryan, for instance, right? Like, he's got, like, a sense of humor. He's funny. Like, dude, look at Hollywood right now. Is there any such thing as, like, really good actors anymore? Like, what are the only movies you come out that know that do really well?
What was that?
Yeah, like, no, the guys that come out nowadays that do movies that are successful, like, the guys who are the stars in Hollywood, they're all comedians. They're all guys, like, you know, they do, like, these pseudo-comedic kind of, you know, witty humor type things. It's like there's all these corny fucking movies. I feel like WWE, they're like, yeah, we know that this is fake. We know this is bullshit. So we're just here to have a good old time. It's like they don't ever turn up the notches no more. They don't ever go to like 11 anymore. It's just like they're perfectly content with just being fun and cool and, you know, being a good time for everybody, but it's like they don't create those moments anymore where it's like, whoa, this is so fucking cool. Like, I mean, do you blame that on the writers or do you blame that on the performers? You know what I mean? Like,
right,
are the wrestlers there to be able to produce those types of moments or are they just not given the opportunities, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's a mix of things.
Yeah, I agree. What are some of the, like, the goals that you have in wrestling that you haven't accomplished yet?
I know I absolutely want to keep doing what I'm doing now. My number one goal always was obviously to wrestle in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
If I achieve my goal, it would be to, you know, work steady in Japan as a gaijin and just, you know, work with a decent company and be able to, you know, make some decent money wrestling over there on the regular. I mean, and just, you know, still coming home, being able to work the indies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like I feel like guys in the business, like, their mouths would drop that I wouldn't say I want to wrestle in the WWE. But, like, you know, people say, well, what if they offered you a contract? Would you take it? I'm like, I mean, yeah, probably, but, I mean, to be honest with you, that's just, like, not something I sit around and I dream about. You know,
right.
I hate to sound like a downer, but I'm more focused on, like, my day-to-day life and being able to, like, pay my bills and, you know, thinking about, like, what I'm actually probably going to really be doing in about 5 or 6 years. Because I know personally what it's like to have it all taken away from you in a heartbeat. And to not have a backup plan and to just be kind of lost. And when people go through that, I see people go through it all the time. It's like, they make irrational decisions, and you got to be smart about life. People put all their eggs in one basket when it comes to pro wrestling. And you could look at some of the most successful wrestling superstars that we'll ever know, household names, pop culture phenomenons, like Jake the Snake Roberts and, you know, Razor Ramon and all these guys, blah, blah, blah. They made millions and millions of dollars, all these pro wrestlers that we know. And they all end up becoming complete fuck-ups. It's like, you know, I tell everybody, you got to keep your head on straight, you know? Have a clear idea of what you want to do, be what you want to be, and try your best to get where you want to get, but don't lose yourself in a false world. It's because when reality kicks in, you're going to be like, oh, damn, like, kicked me in my ass pretty fucking hard. Some people need that. Some people definitely need that, but, you know, some people deal with it a little bit differently than others.
Sure. Well, do you have any upcoming dates you want to plug, or?
Absolutely. I'm going to be at CZW on Saturday. That's 11-2. Obviously, CZW, if you don't know CZW and you're listening to this show, I don't know what's wrong with you. So you should definitely come to CZW. I'm actually not on the card because originally I wasn't supposed to be, but I am going to be in the building. So I can't promise anything, but I can promise something. That something probably will happen. So, CZW, always want to go to CZW. That's a fun show. ISW coming up, which is going to be dope. I think it's the weekend of the 16th and the 17th. I got ISW and Beyond Wrestling back to back. Now, Beyond Wrestling is having pretty much like their third live show of the string of the live shows taking place at Fat Music. So this is going to be a pretty big event. But not to undermine the event with ISW, I am wrestling Pinky Sanchez for the first time. You asked before about guys that I have natural chemistry with. I mean, me and Pinky Sanchez, we're promoing each other in text message all day long. We're just always on having fun. It's just me and him just, we love it. We love it, and we have fun. So
I see he constantly posts love songs on your wall.
We just are always going at it. Like, today shit got real. Like, we were, like, dissing on each other so hard. And, I'm telling you, at the show at ISW, I'm going to fucking kill him. So if you want to see somebody get fucked up, come to the ISW show. Definitely the Beyond Wrestling.
You had mentioned the Beyond Wrestling. Real quick, you mentioned the Beyond Wrestling with their live shows and stuff. That's that new place with the balcony around the ring, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Our live show.
Where is that located?
That's in Providence, Rhode Island.
It's an awesome-looking venue.
Yeah, Providence, Rhode Island. I mean, honestly, the Beyond Wrestling live shows, there's nothing else like it. If you haven't been to one, I urge you to check one out. They're like, I tell everybody, I'm like, this is like going to a real concert or something, like going to a real tight, small show. It's a lot of fun. The fans come right up to the ring. It's completely interactive. And, I mean, the cards are stocked with some of the best wrestlers from all around the world. Like, you know, it's not the garage in Ohio anymore. It is...
Sure.
It is a full-fledged wrestling powerhouse, and those shows are like totally fun. I'm wrestling for a company called On Point Wrestling. I wrestled Scott Summers there, and it was a crazy ass match. On Point Wrestling is going to be, I believe, on the 23rd, and on the 24th, I'm wrestling for Wrestling Is Respect, which is one of the subsidiaries for Chikara. Wrestling Is Respect. It's the one that's based out of New Jersey. Boonton, New Jersey. I actually don't know who my opponent is yet, but I know I'm announced for the show. So that's going to be interesting. I wrestled Green Ant on the last Wrestling Is Respect show, and it was a great match. So I'm looking forward to going back there.
Cool.
Yeah, that's pretty much my schedule for November. So.
Cool. And if anyone wants to reach you online or anything like that?
Yeah, hit me up on Facebook. That's definitely where I talk and interact with most of my fans. My Facebook is pretty much mostly wrestling oriented. I use Twitter, but not really. I don't really tweet anymore. I kind of just got like sick of social media. I know people say that's like a curse. You can't do that in pro wrestling. Twitter controls everything. But honestly, I mean, if you're judging me as a professional wrestler based on my tweets, like, I don't want you to judge me at all. You know, I can't keep my face sucked into a cell phone 24/7. So
sure.
I don't. I still keep it open though. If you want to add me on Twitter, it's at Dirty Dickinson, and pretty much that's it. If you want to email me, my email is chrisdickinsonfight@yahoo.com. You know, bookings, emails, bullshit, whatever. Hit me up.
Cool. Before I let you go, you want to cut a promo for the show real quick?
Yeah, sure. You want me to like put over the show?
Yeah, Yakuza Kick Radio.
No, absolutely. So, like, what exactly do you want me to say? Like, what do you want me to, like, call it, or, you know, how do you want me to deliver it?
Whatever, man. Put your own spin on it. It's all good.
All righty. Just hang on one second.
All right.
Cool, man. All right, you ready to go?
Yep.
Yo, check it out right here. You and my man J-Cat, and you on his podcast. So you better have some fucking respect and listen in. And listen to what these guys have to say, because they probably know a little bit more about wrestling than you do.
Nice. Yeah, man, thanks for coming on. Definitely like to have you back again in the future. It's been great, man.
Absolutely, bro. Take it easy.
All right. Have a good night, man.
Be good.
All right. So there you go. There's Chris Dickinson. Had a great time, you know, interviewing the dude. Great dude. Enjoyed it, you know, quite a bit. I'm going to take a break. I'm going to try to get Christian Simpson on, talk some football. So I'm going to take a break right now. Like I said, I'm, you know, kind of backed up as far as the computer's all fucking wacky, so... really don't have a lot of options as far as what songs. I'm going to have to definitely go back to something I've played before. Let me just scroll right down here and see what I got. Let's go back to some Outsiders, and then I'll try to dial up Christian, and I'll be back, talk some football and whatnot. A little CZW, too.
Yeah, it's just part of the game. I use a whole pack of Magnum. My niggas get knocked for having on the vest blasting. Coke type shit, yo, crew do time for trespassing. Yo, CD, niggas might feel it tilted. The video better look like Hype Williams filmed it. I hit the internet to find out where to get a check. And a pack of dip cigarettes to tell me where to send a check. Bitches shit is dripping sweat off my silhouette. Screaming, do you get it wet? And I ain't even hit it yet. I'm failing all my piss testers. Smoking with these hoes with them big, big breasts. So don't be ashamed. Let my man fuck, we'll be running the train.
So if the nigga act up, you get one in the brain. That's the type of shit that keeps running the train. That one of us fuck, man.
Enough dough to get my celly ice. Coke guns, biggity, Kelly Price. Drop mad bomb. Fuck safety, keep the gat on. 44 Taurus in my fat farm. Suck the please, to owe you fucking tees. Lay back puffin' trees, got your girl fucking knees. You fool be strapped, no way you can do me black. Let the toolie clap, put one in your koozie hat. Put your brains in your cutie lap. Like MX, I'm everywhere that you be at. Setting booby traps. Holy shit, ask the black Moby Dick. Yo, we sick, don't count the dough we get. Blow me, bitch. You fuck around, my crew, my base. You should quit this and go back to school like Mace. Cause that rap you suck, ask the clap you duck. Make the coroner wrap you up, ask you nuts.
Yeah.
Bullies on the block.
We could be together if you just listen and be strong.
run train.
So if a nigga act up, you get one in the brain.
That's the type of shit that gets done in the gang.
He let one of us fuck, man, I'm running the train.
That's the type of shit that gets done in the gang.
We the old UGs, we gon' come with the pain.
That's the type of shit that gets done in the gang.
Bring the motherfucking noise like the thunder and rain.
Yo.
All right, I'm back. All right, yeah, I think I got Christian on the line too. We're gonna talk a little NFL football for you, Christian.
J. Cat Morris.
What's going on, man?
Not much, man. How you doing?
Doing all right. Doing all right. So yeah, just finished up a good interview. Figured definitely want to get in some NFL football.
Absolutely, and congrats on the interview, man.
Nah, no problem, man. That's good look.
Oh, definitely.
So yeah, last week started out with a Thursday game of the Buccaneers being pretty upsetting as usual. The Panthers putting a 31-13 beating on them. I don't know. What's your thoughts on these Bucs? Are they going to have any kind of recovery, some kind of last surge, or are they pretty much getting the number one draft pick?
They're pretty much getting either the number one or number two draft pick. I mean, you look at this team, it just seems like this team is really giving up on Greg Schiano. They're not using Darrelle Revis the right way. Don't have Doug Martin. I like Mike Glennon, and I think he could be a pretty talented quarterback in our game, J-Cat, but this team just isn't meshing. They're giving up a lot of big plays down the field, and you notice teams are attacking Darrelle Revis more than we've seen in previous years.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That shutdown defense seems to not be so solid.
Right, and you thought with these guys they were going to be okay. You thought they were going to bounce back after two close losses, but it's just gotten worse and gone downhill from here.
All right. Now, I mean, what do you make of the Panthers? I mean, they're 4-3 now, but, I mean, their wins are over the Giants, over Minnesota, over St. Louis, and over Tampa Bay. Is there any truth to this team, or is it more or less based on opponent?
I think it's more or less based on opponent. I mean, yeah, you do beat who you beat, but how's this team going to be against a Saints team? How's this team going to be against Atlanta? Though they aren't playing that way. Cam Newton can play a little bit more consistently. This team can go on a run. They do play some pretty good defense. After all, they do have a defensive-minded head coach in Ron Rivera.
Oh, they got the Niners in 2 weeks, so we'll see about, you know, what goes on there.
And I think San Francisco demolishes them.
Yeah. You know, I hope so. So.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, then you got the Lions-Cowboys. Oh, man. Just another, you know, epic collapse of the Cowboys last minute. I mean, brilliant comeback by Stafford for him to drive down the field like that last minute. You know, that fake, you know, first since Marino, or at least headline-wise. And, I mean, just great end to the game. I mean, Johnson is just an animal. 329 yards. I mean, I don't know what else you could say about the guy. I mean, he's just incredible. I mean, there's really not a lot that, you know, you can add to it.
You're right. But, hey, you look, the way I look at it, me, J-Cat, I used to play defense. We take it very seriously with one another on the defensive side of the ball. You know Calvin Johnson is going to be the go-to guy on the Detroit Lions. You know, Stafford is going to look his way, and he's going to do his best to get him the football by all means necessary. So why would you play him in single coverage with help over the top? He's going to win that battle each and every time. And Calvin Johnson, you're going to like this comparison, J-Cat, with you being a Miami Heat fan. He's a LeBron James of the NFL. I think he's really unstoppable unless you double-team him because, you know, he has excellent hand-eye coordination, great agility, great field vision, can catch the football. And you can put three guys around him, and he's going to do something with the football. He's going to come down with it somehow, some way. I think he's the best player in the National Football League that's not a quarterback, point blank, period. He makes plays. He carries his team on his back, and he may be the best offensive player in football that's not a quarterback. But going back to Dallas, that Brandon Carr was on him all day in single man-to-man coverage across the board with safety top over the help. That's not going to do it. You have to double-team him, put two guys on him at the line of scrimmage so he can't get a push off that line of scrimmage, and they didn't do that. You knew he was getting the ball, so you can't put this loss on Tony Romo because he did everything he could to keep his team in the game. It was the defense that really let them down.
Yeah. Another thing, you know, I continue to say about the Lions, I really think, you know, no matter how, you know, much Calvin Johnson's obviously going to be a complete game changer and everything, I think a huge, huge, you know, staple in this team is Reggie Bush and what he's been able to do, you know, both, you know, short receiving yards and rushing the ball, and he just really spreads the field out a lot from what he's doing.
Yeah, he really does, and he has Calvin Johnson to thank a lot for that, J-Cat, and I say that because, look, Calvin Johnson, like I just said, he's one of the best players in football. He's the best wide receiver in football, and they're going to plug him in the slot and on the outside, left or right, to get him the football. They don't – look, we know this guy is going to get the football somehow, some way. They're going to use him in different packages on the line of scrimmage, and that's to the point where he's drawn double and triple teams no matter where he is on the football field. So teams aren't stacking the box to defend the run on the Detroit Lions. That's why Reggie Bush has had the success that he's had, because he's in a conventional offense like he was in USC. The Saints weren't using him the right way. The Dolphins were starting to use him the right way. But now he's in an offense where he can roam in the open field, and he stretches the field like you just said.
Sure. And, you know, you get the comment where, you know, Dez Bryant says he could do anything Megatron could do. And, you know, just I think the president would say.
He's a jackass.
Because I don't think that's, you know, I think that point was proven.
Look, I like Dez Bryant, J.K. I think he's a top five wide receiver in the game, and I like what he does physically on the football field. He stretches the field. He's strong. He's athletic. He can run the routes. You know, he's excellent in the red zone. I think he's become one of the best red zone threats we have in our game today, along with Calvin Johnson, A.J. Green, and Rob Gronkowski. You know, I think he's in that category, but I'm not ready to put him in that category with Calvin Johnson. Calvin's in a category by himself, and he's proved that the last couple of years, but he has to control how he acts on the sideline. You're not remembered by what you do on the field always. You remember how you conduct yourself during the most difficult times, and he didn't do that on Sunday.
Right. Yeah, for sure. You know, frustration sets in, and, you know.
Definitely.
The Chiefs stay undefeated against the Browns. The Browns continue to really scrap and fight in those games. I just, you know, not sure what they're doing with their quarterback situation. Whedon's just not solid at all. You know, they ended up with Campbell in the game. I don't know what the, you know, I think that team's probably still a year or two off of, you know, being something to worry about. I really thought this year was going to be, you know, they were going to make some waves, and I think they started to do that with Hoyer, but, you know, him going out kind of shook everything up. But they're competitive either way. You know, undefeated Chiefs team, they banged out with the Chiefs. And, you know, they remain undefeated because that's, you know, what got them there. But, you know, I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah. You know, you look at Kansas City, and with Alex Smith, they're not – you know him best, J-Cat. You've seen him play for all these years.
Yep.
And he's not going to be a guy that's going to light it up. You know, he's not one of your stat sheet stuffers. I know that's a basketball term, but I think we could use it in this analysis right here. He's not a guy that's going to throw three for 350 yards and three or four touchdown passes a game. That's simply not his style. They're just asking this guy, look, control the game clock. You know, don't turn the ball over. Control the line of scrimmage. Hand the ball off. throw the short to intermediate passes, and you have a defense that's going to do their job and get you the football back when they can, and that's exactly what they've done. But it just seems like teams are playing them a little bit tougher now, and I think their first loss than we think.
What's that? Their first loss?
I think I think so, because, you know, with these undefeated teams, when they struggle down the stretch and down in the fourth quarter to put an opponent away, that goes to tell you their first loss is coming.
Yeah, it's very possible. I mean, they're just not, you know, for a while people were trying to hand the Denver Broncos the Super Bowl title already, and I'm completely against that. And I'll get a little more into that as, you know, we get to the Broncos. But, you know, the thing is the Chiefs, you know, they seem to just be able to, you know, play, and in the end they get the job done. They might not put up 100 points, but, you know, they're that team. And – you know, speaking of the Broncos, I mean, when they get down to playing them, they got it set up where they play them 2 weeks apart. They play them, I think, both games in November. They play them. 2 weeks later, they play them again. So, I mean, you're definitely going to see a test of both of these teams in those two games.
Right. You're definitely right. Honestly, I think they split those matchups. And we haven't seen a Broncos-Chiefs game so hyped up like this one will be.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you had the Patriots and the Dolphins. Patriots win 27-17. The Dolphins just seem to completely fall apart. They won, you know, a lot of early games. They were undefeated starting out. They took the loss to New Orleans, and they seemed just completely overwhelmed by New Orleans, which was kind of understandable. New Orleans, you know, has a high-powered offense. But then, you know, they took some consecutive losses after that, and I just feel like they lost their confidence and momentum. I don't know if they're going to get it back. This was the game that, I mean, if these Dolphins pulled out that game, the whole AFC East was shook up. I mean, they pretty much leveled the playing field if they won this game, and they couldn't get it done. But, you know, the Patriots, they still have a lot of uphill climbing. I think the rest of their schedule looks pretty pleasing to them, and they're not going to have – I think at the end of the season, they're going to have a record that makes them look like gold. And then the playoffs are really going to tell what the Patriots are all about.
I agree with you 100%. And Tom Brady hasn't been the Tom Brady that we're accustomed to seeing. He's not the guy that's lighting up defenses week in and week out. Teams aren't afraid to pressure him and load the box and bring up a guy up the middle to flush him out the pocket. And J-Cat, look at how different he is in that pocket than when he is out that pocket. He looks like a completely different guy. He's discombobulated. Sure. He's running for his life, and he's still not on the same page with these wide receivers. He's not on the same page with Tompkins and Dobson. Julian Edelman, yeah, he's a veteran guy. Rob Gronkowski is still trying to get incorporated into this offense. So they still have a lot of work to do. And this defense, they're struggling without Gerard Mayo, their best player. Don't have Vince Wilfork, and teams are running it right up the middle on this Patriots defense. But they're getting the job done somehow, some way, because they're running a football.
Mm-hmm. Yep. What's your feelings on the Dolphins?
You know, God, I was so impressed with them the first 3 weeks of the season. And coming into the season, nobody defended them more than I did. I said, look, this team is going to be good. Now they're 3-4 after a 3-0 start. I hope we're not seeing the Arizona Cardinals again, J-Cat, because I think you remember that. That was pretty brutal. They start 4-0,
yeah,
and then they lose 9 in a row. I mean, that's just unheard of. You don't know what to get, but they could turn it around. They, you know, they have to play better, and when they have a lead, they have to hold on to it, because that's what their problem has been the last couple of weeks.
Sure. And just a quick go back to what I was saying about New England. I, you know, pulled up their schedule. The rest of their season goes like this: Pittsburgh, a week off; Carolina, Denver, Houston, Cleveland, Miami, Baltimore, and Buffalo. Now, barring that Denver Broncos game, that looks like a pretty pleasing rest of the season for them.
Yeah, it really does. I think they lose against Denver. That one's in New England, right?
Sure.
Yeah, I think they lose that one.
Yep.
Yeah, I think they lose that one.
Besides that, they can win out the rest of those games, and it still doesn't make them, you know, the New England of old.
Definitely. Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think this team, you know, they're struggling right now. Tom Brady, like I said, he isn't the Brady that we're accustomed to seeing, but look at what he has around him. You know, he doesn't have Aaron Hernandez for obvious reasons. I mean, the guy's in the jail cell right now. That's all him.
Yeah.
Rob Gronkowski, he's not 100%, or is he? We don't know. Wes Welker, I think he was a real instrumental piece in this offense because Tom knew he could just check that ball to him, and then Wes was going to do the rest. But he's not there anymore. Danny Amendola, he's a question mark. We don't know if he can stay healthy. Dobson, he's dropping wide open passes. Tompkins, I think he's been on pace with Tompkins the best out of everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, Danny Amendola, I'm ready to drop him from my fantasy squad because I just have no confidence in this guy anymore. Oh, man. It's just horrendous. But the Saints beat up the Bills 35-17. Drew Brees throws 5 touchdowns. I mean, this offense is looking really high-powered. Stills puts up 2 touchdowns. And, you know, I dropped him from my fantasy team earlier in the year, so that'll show me. I don't know, you know, how powerful is this Saints team? Is it a matter of not really meeting their match yet? Or is this team that scary as far as offensively?
Offensively, I think, you know, they're the second best offense in football because Drew Brees doesn't really have a go-to guy that he can get the football to. If you're open, he's going to get it to you somehow, some way. Yeah, he and Jimmy Graham have been on a tear this year, but, you know, Stills is incorporated in this offense. You got Lance Moore. You got Devery Henderson, Robert Meacham. You got Marcus Colson on the outside. But I want to see the Saints develop a running game. That's what I think is going to set them apart from everybody else in the league. If they can get a running game and they can have the balance on offense instead of putting games in the hands of Drew Brees like they often do, I think they're going to be scary, and they might be a breeze in the NFC playoffs. But the way it's looking right now with their defense doesn't have to be lights out. They don't have to be great. They just have to be average because they have an offense that's going to keep them in football games.
Yeah. I mean, they have a few tests in, you know, their upcoming schedule. I mean, they play San Francisco in a couple weeks. At San Francisco, they play in their home they play San Francisco, and you know, then they have to go to Seattle 2 weeks after that. So I mean, they do have some challenges coming up,
right? And you know, I think those two games are going to determine who the Saints really are, because let's be real, you look at their schedule, they beat a Falcons team we didn't know what they were going to be, then they beat Tampa, they barely slide by Tampa, they destroy Arizona, then they beat Miami. You know, they come to Chicago, they beat a Bears team, then they lose to New England, and then now they play Buffalo. So I think that's when we're going to see how real this Saints team really is against those two, and I think those are two of the better teams in the National Football League, in the 49ers and the Seahawks.
Yep. Yeah. Then you got the Giants beat the Eagles. Giants pull off a second win. Now all the Giants fans come out of the woodwork. I get to hear about the Big Blue. They dust off their jerseys. I got all these Facebook pictures now. This proud Giants fandom has all come out of the woodwork. I don't know what kind of dusting you did over the weekend, but what's your thoughts on this Giants now?
You know, honestly, with the Giants, they still have a shot, J.K., and honestly, there's no clear-cut favorite to win. There's no clear-cut favorite that's saying, ooh, this is the team I don't want to face in January. This team can turn it around in a heartbeat. I've watched the Giants a lot of years, and I've seen them do some things that just make me say, wow, they were here a couple of weeks ago. Now they're here. That's unbelievable. Now, but see, they're taking care of the football. That's what I think has been the biggest improvement over the last couple of weeks. They're taking care of the ball. They're playing good defense. They're putting pressure on the quarterback, and they're getting takeaways, and Eli's holding on to the football.
Yeah. You know, they beat the Eagles. The Eagles are, you know, all around the place with their quarterback. You know, Vic, I don't know. Vic is going to – I'd be surprised if he's playing for the Eagles next year. I just think he's going to continue to get banged up, and, you know, we're going to see how that pans out. But I don't trust that guy's
longevity. J-Cat, let me tell you this. I call Michael Vick Mr. Glass because all he does is break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought the stupidest thing he could have possibly done, I laughed hysterically because I can't stand Mike Vick. I'm an animal lover, and I just, you know, I don't care
right,
what
for
jail
obvious
time
reasons. For obvious reasons.
Yeah, so I just, there's no possible way I could ever support that guy. And, you know, I just thought, I laughed maniacally when I heard in the preseason he made the proclamation that I'm going to start running the football a lot more, which I thought was the stupidest thing for a quarterback to announce to the NFL. So sure enough, you know, not even halfway through the season, who's out was a, you know, pulled his hamstring or whatever. Just unbelievable.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, you look at the way he plays. This is what I've noticed from Michael Vick the last couple of years, J-Cat. Let's talk about Michael Vick the athlete, and that's the guy you just talked about, the guy who wants to run the football and make plays with his feet. That's just the way he is. That's the way he goes. That's the way he's always been about his business. Now let's talk about Michael Vick, the quarterback, and that's the guy that we saw in 2010, the one who got the second chance from Andy Reid with the Philadelphia Eagles, standing in that pocket, and he showed you he could beat you from the pocket with his arms and still do some things with his feet. But I think it's just getting him in trouble now. And as a defense, most Michael Vick, the athlete, you wanted to keep him in a pocket and take away his running lanes.
Sure. Yeah, I just, you know, again, with the Giants, you know, they pull off their two wins, and like you said, it's anybody's game, but that's because that NFC East is just horrendous. I mean.
Yeah, I call it the NFC Least.
Yeah, that's,
I mean,
pretty accurate.
You know, yeah, it's bad, and this is mostly the most unpredictable division in football because you never know what you're going to get from them, and either one of those teams can win that division. There's never a clear-cut favorite.
Sure. Anyway, next up you had my Niners go over to England and just beat the Jaguars, the 0-8 Jaguars, 42-10. Kaepernick and Gore both put up two rushing touchdowns. I mean, you know, another passing touchdown out of Kaepernick, defensive touchdown out of the Niners, just scored all over the place. And I know it's the Jaguars, but I just couldn't be happier than to watch that because they really just showed all points of, you know, possible scoring and just firing on all cylinders.
And the thing I'm liking about San Fran now, J-Cat, is this. They've gone back to running the football. They're not putting games in the hands of Colin Kaepernick. They're running the football and they're playing good defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, lead rusher was still, you know, Kendall Hunter. And, you know, it didn't even need to be Frank Gore. That's the dangerous thing. I mean, if we get LaMichael James back, you got LaMichael James, you got Kendall Hunter, you have, of course, Frank Gore. You have the run threat of Colin Kaepernick. And then, you know, God forbid, I mean, we got Anquan Boldin doing well. The guy who they said had no chemistry with Colin Kaepernick, Vernon Davis, is lighting it up out there. And, you know, imagine we get Mario Manningham back, possibly against Carolina. And then you're talking about the timetable of getting Michael Crabtree back. You get that receiving core out there doing what they're doing, and that's a dangerous offense.
Yeah, it really is. I still think San Fran wins this division. I know Seattle, they've looked great, and they played some football, but they played some good football. But I still think that's San Fran's division to win.
Yeah, I would have to agree. Yeah.
Look, J-Cat, I'm sipping a San Francisco 49er Kool-Aid with you. Is that cool?
Yeah, absolutely, man. There's plenty to go around. And you got the Bengals beat the Jets heavy-handedly. Dalton throws five touchdowns. I mean, the Jets, they're so up and down. And, again, I don't know if this is strength of opponent. You know, they went and they beat the Patriots, but who are the Patriots? You know, or it's definitely not the team of old, and, you know, I don't know. It's really hard to call the Jets. You know, they pulled off a win against the Falcons, but who are the Falcons? Buffalo Bills, the Tampa Bay Bucks, but they go into Cincinnati and just get destroyed. I don't know. I mean, Cincinnati, I think, has a high-powered team. I definitely think they can make some waves, especially, you know, in the division they're sitting in. Definitely see them winning that division, personally. And I don't know. I have a hard time seeing the Jets as anything but the Jets.
Well, the Jets played some good defense. They didn't on Sunday. They gave up four touchdowns to one guy in Marvin Jones. Yeah, they did their best to take away A.J. Green, and I've always said you take him away and you force Andy Dalton to beat you with somebody else, and that's exactly what he did. And I think the Bengals now have that complimentary piece to AJ Green on the other side, because AJ is going to see his double teams. He's going to see his fair share of bump and run coverages across the board. But you got Marvin Jones, who's going to see a lot of one-on-one opportunities of man-to-man coverage on the other side. And I think he can expose the weakness of the defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You got the Raiders beat the Steelers. These Steelers, I don't know. Ben Roethlisberger, I still stick to my statement that I think he's just about done. I mean, he's doing what he can out there, but it just doesn't look like it's a – I mean, it's just a sad effort. When he runs, he looks like a fat elk when he runs. I was making that comparison on Sunday watching him. He tries to get out of there, and he just looks like a wounded animal, a big wounded animal. I don't know, man. Watching that Terrell Pryor bust off that 93-yard from scrimmage, I just started laughing. I'm like, oh, man.
Well, I thought I was seeing a little bit of an improvement from the Steelers after they won those two football games. And you look at when they started 0-4, they weren't running the football. They were having some issues on that offensive line, and Ben Roethlisberger was heaving it down the field a little bit too much. So they make adjustments to their offense, you know, depending on that play action. No, I'm sorry. Dependent on that running game, throwing short to intermediate passes, Ben Roethlisberger still moving down that football field. And then the play action, which sets up the ability for a defense to be sucked in, and then you get the football down the field, and you're wide open to score 6 points. Then when I see on Sunday, just their defense. Their defense isn't the same. They're not that intimidating unit that we're accustomed to seeing, and they're not a unit that we're going to get a takeaway or two a game. They can get you a takeaway, but they're not going to put 6 points on it. They're not going to take that turnover and turn it in to a touchdown like we're accustomed to seeing. That defense is old. Troy Polamalu, he's injury-prone. Ryan Clark is old. They have to get younger.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. The Broncos beat the Redskins, another high-scoring event. The Broncos ended up, I think they were down early. They scored the last 38 points of the game. Peyton Manning just continues to do what he does. I mean, he's just a machine out there. You know, he's that guy that he doesn't have the strongest arm in the league. He doesn't have the most mobility in the league, but he's the smartest professional football quarterback. I mean, just hands down.
Because of the way he prepares, he's going to make everybody better around him. And I think he has the best receiving core in football with, you know, the Thomas boys, and you got Eric Decker, and then you got Wes Welker as well. I mean, he can get the football to either one of these guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the one thing, too, that, you know, I say about the Broncos, and this is the reason why I think that they are overrated, is because that defense just hemorrhages points. I mean, they're, I think, only I think there's only three other teams that are giving up more points than them, and it's pretty bad. I think a hard-playing defensive team is going to give them a lot of problems.
Oh, definitely. I see it right now. That's why I think Kansas City is going to give them a fit.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because if you could slow Peyton down, you can score on that defense at will.
Definitely. I agree. 100%.
Yep. So the Cardinals beat the Falcons. the Falcons are just a hard team to watch anymore. They're just... I mean, Ryan was their leading rusher with 13 yards. So he ran the ball for 13 yards, and he led in rushing. I mean.
Right.
That's just,
right. The Falcons are just a mess. They're injury riddled. Just having injuries really hurts your team as a whole. But I look at the Atlanta Falcons, and they're just a mess. Right now, defense, they don't have a defense, J-Cat. They can't stop anybody. They put no pressure on the quarterback. They don't they give up a lot of coverage. They blow a lot of coverages and give up a lot of big plays down the football field. So, you know, they really struggle across the board. Steven Jackson was supposed to be that piece that was really supposed to give them the balance they needed. He's not doing that, and Julio Jones is gone for the year.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, there was a point where the Falcons pretty much played the first half of the game in defense and then let it up. And now it just seems like they're just gone from the start.
Yep. Yeah, I agree.
The Packers beat the Vikings 44-31. The Vikings are just another one of these teams that are horrendous. I just, you know, you see them as this team, and they were so led by Adrian Peterson having the beast of a year that he had last year. And I think that's the only thing that keeps this team together. I think beyond just a standout performance by Adrian Peterson carrying the team, this team dies in the water. And, I mean, they proved that in the playoffs last year. You know, going from Freeman to Ponder, they don't know what to do anymore. And I think they're going to be a hard team to watch for a while. You there, Christian? Okay, Christian dropped. So let me see if he calls back. The Vikings are just pretty much a joke. I mean, they had, like I said, Josh Freeman, you know, in there, just kind of threw him in without any type of game plan or anything, you know, a line for him to even fall into the offense. It was just try to just throw him into the fire and see what happened. I'm trying to see. I'm not sure why he dropped off there. Let me see. He hasn't called back in yet. Let me see. Yeah, he hasn't called back in. So, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much, you know, the last game there. Let me get, okay. All right, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, cool. Yeah, I was saying, the Vikings, without Adrian Peterson pretty much carrying the team on his back, and they're, you know, they're flipping around with their quarterbacks, and they really don't know what they're doing there. And what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I had a feeling they weren't going to be the same team that they were last year, and I think everybody had a year to study how to really defend and shut down and stop Adrian Peterson, and he's a violent runner. Look at how he attacks the line of scrimmage. You know, he wants to run it, and he wants to attack it with some vigor and some aggressiveness, and I think as a defender, you have to attack the line of scrimmage with him as well and force him to go outside because he loves running in between those tackles. And even before the awful tragedy that happened in the passing of his 2-year-old son, he just didn't seem to be in the game.
Right. Yeah, absolutely not. I mean, what's your thoughts on the Packers? I mean, they've lost a bunch of pieces. You know, again, going up in there against the Vikings, you know, they pull off the game, you know, put up a whole lot of points. Aaron Rodgers is just one of those next-level quarterbacks. I think he's going to continue to, you know, be that guy. But, I mean, they went against, you know, a really struggling Washington Redskins team early, take the losses to the Niners and the Bengals. I mean, they beat Detroit pretty heavy-handedly, you know, and then beating Baltimore, Cleveland, Minnesota. What do you think of this Green Bay team?
You know, despite the fact that they've lost so many pieces, J-Cat, this team is quietly winning football games. They're 5-2. They've won 4 games in a row. And from an offensive standpoint, they're missing guys. You know, they're missing Randall Cobb. He's their most versatile player because you can line him up in the backfield, line him up in the slot, line him up outside, and he's going to make something happen on the football field somehow, some way. Obviously, we saw what happened with Jeremichael Finley, and you wish him a speedy recovery. You hope he can just get back on the football field because he's good in certain pass blocking situations, and he opens up the middle of the field, and he can run the seams and run the numbers in the field. And then James Jones, that's 14 touchdown passes from a year ago. You're not going to replace those, but Jordy Nelson stepped up. Eddie Lacy has been a godsend to this team because he's given this Packers offense the balance that it's needed in the ground game. And then defensively, they don't have Clay Matthews, but they're playing good defense. And if these pieces can come back and if they're still playing like this, this is a team I don't want to face in January.
Sure. The Monday night game, you had Seattle beating the Rams barely. I mean, this was definitely brought a smile to my face. And, you know, almost was a lot better because they barely escaped the Rams. If it wasn't for a goal line stand, the Rams come back and beat the Seattle Seahawks. And I don't know. I mean, Russell Wilson, you know, 10 for 18. Marshawn Lynch, 23 yards in the game. I believe Wilson was sacked like 7 times. I mean, they were really able to shake up that offense and not allow him to do a whole lot. You know, of course, the Seahawks still held them, you know, to field goals, but either way you look at it, their offense couldn't put enough points up to actually get them out ahead and, you know, safe in the game.
Yeah, I agree. And you got to give St. Louis defense a lot of credit because they came out and they hit Seattle where it hurts, and that's the offensive line right now. They've had offensive line issues all year, and that goes back to the Carolina Panthers game in week one because Carolina put pressure on Russell Wilson all day, and that's the reality of it. But they have a defense that can bail them out, and you're absolutely right. If it's not for a goal line stand, St. Louis wins that football game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sure would have made my day, but, you know.
Right.
That's all good. What can you do? Anyway, you know, this week's game, starting with tomorrow, the Bengals go into Miami. Bengals are favored by 2.5 points. I'm going to go with the Bengals. Miami's really struggling, and Cincinnati's looking like a tough team. Who do you got?
I like the Bengals as well. I'm with you, JK. I think they come out. I think they run the ball. Marvin Jones, I don't know if he's going to have the big game that he had last week, but I think he's truly the complimentary piece to A.J. Green that they've needed. And they play great defense. They have a great front four. They can put pressure on the quarterback, and their secondary makes plays. I like the Bengals.
Yeah. Tennessee at St. Louis. Tennessee's favored by 3.5 points. Who do you got there?
I like Tennessee. I think they can come out. I like Jake Locker coming back, really getting this team into a rhythm, because look at how well they were playing before his injury. I think if they can get Chris Johnson the football and spread the football around and use those wide receivers and play some good defense, I think they can beat Lewis. So I like Tennessee.
Yeah, I like Tennessee as well. The only thing that worries me about that is, you know, St. Louis is at home, which, I mean, it is what it is. It's St. Louis. But if they're able to put that same pass rush that they put on Russell Wilson on Jake Locker, I think that changes the whole game. But I'm going to go with Tennessee, hoping that doesn't happen.
Definitely.
You got New Orleans at the Jets. New Orleans is favored by 5.5 points. I got to go with them again. The Jets just got beat up by the Bengals. I think this is going to be another beating.
Look, if they can give up 49 points to the Jets, what makes you think they can't do that against the Saints? I like New Orleans. I think Drew Brees is going to spread out their defense, and the Saints, they roll into the Meadowlands, hoping they'll be there in February as well, and they get a win.
Yep. Next up, you got Minnesota at Dallas. Dallas is favored by 10.5 points at home. I got to think Dallas wins this. They've been winning, you know, losing a couple upset games. I mean, 10.5 points, I'm not really sure, but Minnesota's playing pretty brutal. I don't even know who they're starting at quarterback. I got to go with Dallas.
Yeah, I'm with you. I got to go with Dallas as well. I think they get back to the regular things. And if this team can get DeMarcus Ware and DeMarco Murray back, this team wins the NFC East. I think they've been the most complete team in the NFC East. They run the ball. They play not great defense, but they play it good enough to keep them in football games. I like Dallas in this one. I think they bounce back. This game is going to be a little bit closer than I think a lot of people expect because I can't trust that Cowboys defense right now.
Yeah. Yep. Do you know who he's even starting for Minnesota at quarterback?
It's Christian Ponder, J.K.
Okay. Okay, they're going to ride with him for a little bit until maybe Freeman gets used to the offense?
Right.
Yeah. They probably should have did that to start rather than just throwing him into the game. So, but next up, you got Kansas City at Buffalo. Kansas City's favored by 3.5 points. I don't think Buffalo is going to be the team to knock off Kansas City. I got to go with them.
Yeah, I got to go with Kansas City as well. I mean, they're just playing with a lot of confidence right now across the board. Alex Smith is playing fantastic football. This team doesn't turn the ball over. They're well-coached. Andy Reid has them playing with a swagger against themselves, and they're looking ahead to the next opponent, and they're keeping their eye on the prize. I like Kansas City. I think they just have too much defense for Buffalo.
Yeah. Atlanta at Carolina. Carolina's favored by 7.5 points. Who do you got there?
I like Carolina. I don't like the way Atlanta's looking right now, and Carolina's playing with a lot of confidence. And this, I think, could be a confidence booster for the Carolina Panthers. We're beating the team that won the division last year, and they were a game away from the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I'm going with Atlanta kind of on a whim, I guess, because I just think they're due for a win. I mean, they're playing horrible, but they got to get some kind of positive burst at some point or another. I don't know that they're actually aligned to do that right now, but I don't think Carolina is that incredibly strong that Atlanta can't sneak one. The fact that they're giving Carolina 7.5, even if Carolina goes and wins by a touchdown, this still goes in my favor. So for that, I'm going Atlanta.
Okay.
San Diego at Washington, and Washington's favored by 1.5. And I'm going to go with Washington on this one. I think RG3 has started to play the type of ball you expect out of him. You know, of course, starting to play that way and then running into Denver isn't always the best idea. But I go with them.
I like San Diego in this one. I don't trust the Redskins' defense. They don't play any. I think Phillip Rivers just lights up the secondary. RG3 is playing a little bit more confidently now. I think this is going to be a shootout. But give me San Diego. I think they come from the West Coast, go back to the East Coast. They've won two games on Eastern time zones already in Jacksonville. What? J-Cat, you and I could beat the Jaguars probably if we tag team together and get on the football field. And then, they go to Philadelphia in a tough environment and beat the Philadelphia Eagles. They're going into a tough environment in D.C., and I think they can get away with a win.
Well, fair enough. The Philadelphia Eagles at the Oakland Raiders. Philadelphia is favored by 2.5 points. I tend to think Philly's going to go win this game. What do you think?
Oh, man, I like Oakland. I'm not trusting the Eagles right now. They don't stop anybody. They don't play defense. They have quarterback issues. This offense isn't what it was. The offensive line is bad. They're not getting LeSean McCoy the ball. I like Oakland. I really like what Terrell Pryor has brought to this team.
Yeah. I got to definitely go with I'm going to go with Philly, but I can't doubt that Philly's not looking the most confident, and don't blame you. But Tampa Bay in Seattle. Seattle's favored by 16.5 points. What do you think here?
Yeah, I like Seattle in this one. I don't like the way Tampa looks right now. They're just a mess all around, and Seattle, they don't lose at home.
Yeah, I'd have to agree there, unfortunately. Baltimore at Cleveland. Baltimore's favored by 2.5 points. I'm going to go with Cleveland on this one.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm going with Cleveland as well. I don't trust Baltimore. They don't have enough offense, and I think Cleveland gets back in the winning routine, and they run the football, and they pressure Joe Flacco because Paul Kruger, I think he's going to have a big day. I like Cleveland in this one.
All right. Pittsburgh at New England. And New England's favored by 7.5 points. Who do you got?
I like New England. I'm not trusting Pittsburgh right now. They're a mess. I think they're going to give Tom Brady some fits and things like that. But I just think right now, New England, they're going to get past the Pittsburgh Steelers. I don't know if the Steelers have enough offense because their offense is inconsistent. You never know what you're going to get from them.
Yeah, I would agree. Unfortunately for New England, I think it's going to be a closer game than they want it to be. So I don't know about the 7.5 points, but I'm still going to go with New England with that because, it's in New England and it is the Steelers. But the New England defense is just allowing too much, and that's why I think it'll be a little closer.
Definitely.
Indianapolis at Houston, and Indy's favored by 2.5 points. I think this Indy team is a tough team, and it's going to be one of the tougher teams in the AFC down the stretch and everything. So I definitely got to go with Indy.
Yeah, I got to go with Indy as well. I think the way I see it with the Indianapolis Colts, you know, they won a big game before the bye week, but they suffered a loss as well. Reggie Wayne is going to be a huge loss for them because who's going to make that big catch across the middle of the field on third down? That's what we're going to see. So other guys are going to have to step up. You know, the Fleeners, the Hayward Bays, this is why you got him. Trent Richardson, who, you know, he has to step up. He hasn't really done too much of anything since he's become an Indianapolis Colt. This defense is going to keep them in the game, and they're going to put some pressure on Case Keenum, and Case Keenum's given the Houston Texans a spark.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, this Indy team is tough, and, you know, we've gone over a couple teams that, you know, you look at their opponents, you look at that, you look at a couple of Indy's wins. I mean, you got San Francisco, you got Seattle, you got Denver. I mean, this is a team that can knock somebody out of the playoffs. I mean, without question, they're a tough team.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And I think they're going to be there when it's all said and done. I don't know how far this team can go, but just Chuck Pagano has had these guys playing with a lot of confidence around. You know, Andrew Luck, he's picking up where he left off, and he's a top-10 quarterback, J-Cat. I mean, I really like what this guy brings to the table. He has excellent leadership skills. He plays with a lot of moxie and a lot of swagger, and he has no problem putting the game in his hands when the game needs to be won. You can tell he's calm, cool, and collected in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, for sure. Chicago at Green Bay is the Monday night game. Green Bay is favored by 10.5 points. I'm going to go with Green Bay on this one.
Yeah, I'm going with Green Bay as well. The way I see the Bears right now, they're not healthy. I still can't put my finger on this football team.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the games for the week. You want to give any plugs, shout outs, whatever you want to do?
Well, JK, I'm going to send you the link for this too, and I know you'll show your boy some love. We finally bought the domain name to our website. It's officially just dailyblitz61.com, and I'm sure all of you are wondering, what's the 61? That's the last number I wore before I stopped playing football for good, and I just got into this whole broadcasting thing. So, you know, I just want to thank everybody that supported this movement. We're getting better. We're just trying to provide the best analysis possible onto some bigger and better things as the year ends and the new year begins on January 1st, 2014, and I got to thank my big brother, J-Cat, for getting me on this show tonight. Hopefully I can be back on with you down the stretch talking
Absolutely.
More football.
Absolutely. Love to have you back anytime. And, you know, the sports demo is off tonight, but I think they're going to do something Friday, Saturday, something like that. So I'm sure you'll probably be joining them. If not, you know, following Wednesday as always. You could always check Christian out over there.
Yep, and man, check out my man J-Cat. He's informative. He knows what he's talking about. Please support Kick Radio for me. Please, if you can support me, you can support J-Cat.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for coming on, man.
Hey, man, thanks for having me. We'll talk on Facebook, all right?
Absolutely, man. Have a good night.
All right, man. Go Niners.
Yeah, man. There you go. That was Christian Simpson. You know, it was kind of a last-minute thing. He was posting earlier tonight that, you know, he didn't really have anything to do tonight because the sports den was on hiatus. They, you know, like I said, Big Nick, he had to come back from Colorado. He was on vacation over there, so, you know, couldn't do the show. He's in transit today. And, man, I got to give an enormous shout-out to that dude because he hooked me up on Sunday with the ability to use the Sunday Ticket app, you know what I mean, which was his, you know, his thing, you know what I mean. It wasn't even, you know, that type of download, you know, streaming bullshit, nothing of that. Like, straight up, you know, the Sunday Ticket app. I was able to use his joint and watch my Niners beat the shit out of the Jacksonville Jaguars. And then on top of that, be able to sit there and on the 4 o'clock games outside by my fire with my iPad, just watching the NFL Red Zone, watching these games go down. And I can't thank the big homie enough for that, because the dude just came through in the clutch. Never had to do that. You know, and it wasn't something I asked him. He came out of, and it was on his own heart, you know, to hook me up like that. So, I mean, I just got to give a huge, huge shout out to him for that, because that shit was hugely thoughtful, and it made my Sunday straight up. So, Big, big shout out to that dude. And like I said, always check out the Sports Den. Those are my dudes over there. You want some, you know, deep sports talk, these dudes will be, and man, Doob is going to be on fire because I think his Red Sox just won the World Series. So, you know, he's a Boston dude. And, you know, he's going to be wicked charged. So, definitely check them dudes out. Never mind, dudes. Let me see what else I got. The CZW show on Saturday, as you heard Chris Dickinson said, he will be in the house. What he's going to be doing, we don't know. However, on the card, you have a scramble match to earn CZW Wired TV title shot at Cage of Death. This is the show before Cage of Death. You have David Starr, Latin Dragon, Shane Strickland, Caleb Conley, and Andrew Everett. That's, you know, big scramble match to get a title shot at Cage of Death. I mean, personally, I'd like to see that be, I think I'd just have to really go with like a Shane Strickland or Andrew Everett. I think Andrew Everett would be the go-to. You're going to put AR Fox in there with somebody for, you know, for Cage of Death. I think it's got to be Andrew Everett. Or, I mean, Shane Strickland's really been doing some big, big shit, so it wouldn't upset me in the slightest to see him in Cage of Death against AR Fox, but I think Andrew Everett, AR Fox, is just top, top-notch shit. Their last match that they had was just, you watched the two of them, and they just did, you know, aerial stuff and just, you know, the high-flying style to the best that you can possibly see it. I mean, the both of them are just complete next-level high flyers, and I think that match belongs on Cage of Death, so I really hope Andrew Everett pulls out that match. You have an intergender war of Greg Excellent versus Cherry Bomb. Then you got Jake Crist up against Biff Busick, which should be a very, very good match. The Chris just, Ohio is for killers. The Chris just came off of their first Japan tour, so they got to be really charged up over that. Jake's brother Dave will be up against Sozio, formerly Niles Young. So you got that. The CZW Wired. Oh, shit. I don't know why. I'm saying AR Fox for the Wired title. I forgot all about the fact that Alex Colon is the Wired champion. So, again, sorry. Let me retract everything I just said before then. I would like Shane Strickland to win that match. They had a back-and-forth thing going, Shane Strickland and Alex Colon. So I'd like to see Shane win that match. And then Cage of Death, you have the you know, those two lining up against each other, I think that would go really well. See, I forgot all about the fucking title change. Jesus Christ. So, yeah, Alex Colon is defending his Wired TV championship against John Silver. I think that's going to be a really exciting match. Definitely wanted to see John Silver in some singles matches for a while now. So, this is going to be really good. Blackout is defending their tag titles up against Azrael and Bandido. Those guys are no strangers to each other, so that should be good. You got the World Heavyweight Championship being defended. Drew Gulak returning from his tour to Taylor. So, you know. Then you got I don't understand why they have to go out of their way to make asinine fucking stipulations. You have an ultra-violent scumbag rules. Devin Moore versus Drew Blood. Now, the two of these guys have so much chemistry, it's ridiculous. I mean, they were tag teams forever. These guys came up together. They definitely know each other like the back of their hands. I mean, I'd imagine this match is going to go very well. But the stipulations are just, it's just fucking stupid. Ultraviolent scumbag rules. Just saying that shit annoys me. So anyway, the rules are, there's four boxes, and then one of them is going to have a set of keys in it. And those keys will unlock either Lucky and Danny Havoc or Rory and Ron Mathis, who will be handcuffed on the outside. So if Drew Blood gets a key, he can unlock his dudes. And if Devin gets the keys, he can unlock his dudes. And then it's, you know, 3-on-1, da-da-da-da-da. Just want to make a random prediction here. It wouldn't surprise me whatsoever if there was a heel turn, if the dude unlocked the dudes and they turned on him. That wouldn't shock me at all. But beyond that happening, I mean, it's just, it is what it is. They still have to drag this out another month. Whatever it is, it's got to have some kind of finish that leads to another fucking match, because, you know, Cage of Death is next month. They really have to round out everything. Everything that happens on this card has to wind up on Cage of Death. They had initially booked DJ versus AR Fox, which is a match that I'd rather cut my fucking eyeballs out than watch. However, they didn't know or something that AR Fox is not going to be there. So that's not going to happen. So DJ has proclaimed that he is going to make his presence felt, which just means he's going to interject himself somewhere. He's going to annoy part of the card. It's more or less what he's going to. Whatever. It is what it is. You know what the fuck happens with this guy. So, whatever. But anyway, you can check it out at CZWIPPV.com, or you can go to Voorhees, New Jersey, watch that shit live. You know what I mean? So do that thing. That's what's up. I think that's about all I got. Definitely check out my dudes over there at the Wrestling Soup tomorrow night, 7 o'clock Eastern Time. Check out Stern Nation. I believe they'll be on tomorrow night, I believe. Again, the Sports Den will be on either Friday or Saturday, and then back on their regular day on Wednesdays. So check all them out. I think that's all I got. I did a decently long show this week here. So I'm going to go ahead and take it out like that. And let me see. I'm trying to find my shit. All right. Check you motherfuckers out on Wednesday. Peace.
Yakuza Kick Radio. Kill 'em all. Back on top. Think about it. Fuck Hulk Hogan.
Night, this is Stone Cold Steve Austin. And it's a fucked up world we're living in. And people are doing some really bad shit. The TSA is about to start allowing pocket knives and horse shit that's under 2¾ inches back on the airlines. So make sure that when you're packing up with your loved ones, that you're packing a blade just like every other sick, sorry motherfucker that's about to get on the same flight as you. This is Stone Cold Steve Austin. Have a good flight.
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town. That's Yakuza Kick Radio, and we're taking over.
We're taking over. We're taking over. We're taking over.